Association and your local veterinarians.
Morning, St. Louis. 10 minutes after the hour, 6 o'clock at AM 920 WGNU. I'm Howard Morton with a look at this hour's traffic and weather. This hour's traffic is sponsored by TV Guide Channel. Northbound 67 at V, look for an overturned tractor trailer. It's being detoured up and over the overpass. Northbound 65 between M and Rivas Barracks. No problems to report there. Eastbound 44 between Williams and Chrysler. Look for no problems there. Eastbound 40 between Timberlake Manor and Brentwood. Everything is on the move. Eastbound 70 from K to Blanchett. Look for no problems to report there. Northbound 270 from Tesson Ferry to 44. Everything is looking good and sour. Westbound 270 from Riverview all the way to Washington, Elizabeth. Nothing to report there. Westbound 255 from Coke to 55. Expect normal traffic this hour. Westbound 5570 at the Poplar Street Bridge. Traffic is easing this hour. Westbound 64, 5570 merge. Look for no problems there. Westbound Kingbridge traffic at Laclede's Landing looks good. Northbound Route 3 from Poplar Street Bridge. Nothing to report there. That is a look at this hour's traffic. This hour's traffic has been sponsored by TV Guide Channel. See Golden Globe's biggest stars arrivals with the Queens of the Red Carpet. Watch Joan and Melissa live tonight at 5 on TV Guide Channel. Visit TVGuide.com for listing details. Now taking a look at your WGNU forecast for today, tomorrow, and Wednesday. For today, partly sunny, a chance of showers this afternoon, high around 60 this evening, rain likely until early morning, then rain or snow likely late. No accumulations are expected. The low should be in the mid-30s. Tuesday, much colder, mostly cloudy with rain and snow. High in the upper 30s. Tuesday evening, colder, mostly cloudy in the evening, becoming partly cloudy with a low in the upper 20s. Then on Wednesday, partly cloudy skies with a high in the mid-40s. Currently at the studios of AM 920 WGNU, under mostly clear skies, we have 40 degrees. Lambert Field is reporting 40 degrees and clear skies as well. Stay tuned now for Liz Brown and the award-winning wake-up call. It's up next. We'll take another look at your traffic and weather in the bottom of the 6 o'clock hour. I'm Howard Morton for AM 920 WGNU.
Time now for another edition of the wake-up call with Liz Brown. Views expressed on this program are not necessarily those of the staff, management, or advertisers of WGNU Radio. This broadcast is a production of Norman Broadcasting Company, Incorporated, and WGNU Radio, and is intended solely for the information and entertainment of our listening audience. Any rebroadcast, transcribing, recording, or other use of this material without the expressed written consent of Norman Broadcasting Company, Incorporated, and WGNU Radio is strictly prohibited. We ask that you govern your calls within the bounds of brevity and good taste. And now, the wake-up call with Liz Brown.
I think I'm hearing revolution in the air. I think I'm hearing revolution in the air. Young brothers, help me sister. I think I'm hearing revolution in the air. Young brothers, help me sister. Please do not beg for power. Nobody is going to give it to you. You were born with power.
Some very sad news for all of you, the people who love peace all over the world. Martin Luther King was shot and was killed tonight. Remember? I will never say that progress is being made. If you stick a knife in my back 9 inches and pull it out 6 inches, there's no progress. You pull it all the way out, that's not progress. The progress is healing the wound that the blow made.
I think I'm hearing revolution in the air. Young brothers, help me, sister.
City's splendor and glory. There are more poor than ever. More families in trouble. More and more people who need help but can't find it. They struggle against the common enemies of man. Tyranny, poverty, disease, and war itself.
That all men are created equal. Yet many are denied equal.
And so we say to all in this nation who dare listen to us, black, white, Jew, Gentile, Asian, Latino, that we are brothers and sisters in a long and difficult struggle.
Welcome, 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 welcome to the Morning Wake Up Call. This is Liz Brown, living my life as an African and loving it. 454-0400 is my phone number. 454-6609 is my fax. My toll-free long-distance number is 1-877-920-WGNU. That's 1-877-920-WGNU. We have a lot to talk about this morning. We have much, much, much to talk about. We're going to be, in the next hour, we're going to be talking to the author of, and I think that this is fitting, on the day that has been set aside for the celebration of Martin Luther King's birthday. I think that it is fitting, more than fitting, to have the discussion about what is happening in New Orleans. I think it is fitting, more than fitting. I think that it is fitting to talk about bulldozing dead people in New Orleans on this day that is being used to celebrate Martin Luther King's birth. Always a danger. Always a danger in this in the celebration of Martin Luther King's birthday is an attempt to play it safe, not tell the truth, and generally, absolutely, make it happy talk. Martin Luther King stood for the equality of all men. I guess it's about making it palatable to all. Isn't that something? That there has been such an effort to integrate the message of Martin Luther King, that the integration of his message turns out to be a lie. Turns out to be a half-truth. Turns out to be unusable. Because the reality is that Martin Luther King was fighting racism. Plain and simple. Martin Luther King fought classism, no doubt. Absolutely. Martin Luther King was against the war. Absolutely. How many people are going to use Martin Luther King celebrations to talk about the evilness of this war in honor of his birthday? How many people are going to use Martin Luther King celebration to talk about the crimes, the murders that occurred in New Orleans. Aren't we going to use that? Instead, we're going to see pictures of little white children, little black children holding hands and say that's what the dream of Martin Luther King was, for little white children, little black children to hold hands. No, bump that. Bump that. When you have an illegal war where thousands of Americans are dying, when you have a tyrant in the White House that says that it's okay to wiretap, and millions of Americans down with it. When you have Hurricane Katrina that has caused the deaths of thousands of people, homes, loss of hundreds of thousands of people, black people scattered all over the United States, poor people, now poor people, who poorer people, we need a new word to describe the economic situation of the people, of the victims of Katrina. We need a new word that is bigger than poor to describe what their life consists of on the day of celebration for the birth of Martin Luther King. We need a new word. Instead, we're going to get the integration of his birthday. We're going to have foul, racist behaving individuals. Fake folks using this to say something about themselves that ain't true. It's almost like every white person that has done wrong to people of African descent run all over this country trying to find some damn Martin Luther King event to hop up on to say, to see, I'm down with it. What do we say about a celebration of Martin Luther King's birthday when the year before, we had a United States Senate that did not vote completely, absolutely, 100% to apologize for not having legislation against lynching. And it's something that you know what? Maybe I just lost the memo, because sometimes I don't get my mail as quickly as I should. But help me with this. Isn't it an easy thing to say, you know what, I think we should have had a law a handful of years ago that said you can't lynch people because of, no, you can't lynch black people because of the color of their skin. I kind of think that we should have had a law, and shame on us for not having it. No, instead we have the same group of people wanting the world to apologize to the crying lion wife of a crying lion man. Now, the crying wife of a lion man who was trying to get a job promotion. That's what we have apologies for. The crying wife of a lying man. I just want you to feel where we are, ladies and gentlemen of the jury. I just want you to feel. Because I ain't in a celebratory mood this morning. I ain't into to telling lies this morning. I ain't in a mood. I know you all want to be happy out there, but if you examine the condition of this country, please tell me what we have to be celebratory about. How your gasoline prices doing out there? You straight with that? How you feel about the inflation rate? You cool? You down with it? Let me ask you this. Are you secure in the knowledge that your pension fund is going to be there when you retire? Just tell me, because I don't know. I've got some bad news about that, but maybe you know something that I don't know.
How you feeling about the prospects of having Social Security there for you when you're of age? I'm just asking. How you feel about that? How you feel about the prospects of your baby, your son, your daughter, being able to get the money they need to go to college? You straight? You good? You good with that? And how do you feel about your health care? Apple a day? Keep the doctor away? Is that where you are? You feel good. You feel secure in the knowledge that when you pick up the phone and call your doctor, that you're going to be able to get to the hospital you need. Because I'm not going to say nothing if y'all feel good about that. I, for one, am horrified at the situation that most Americans find themselves in. And so I'm not in a celebratory mood this morning. I am not. And I bring to you these contradictions, this fake stuff, this crawling up on, sleazing up onto the back of Martin Luther King to say something about yourself that ain't so. And I wonder what Martin Luther King must think about the mess that has been made since his murder. Does assassination sound like a cleaner word than murder? Assassination sounds kind of almost like professional murder, doesn't it? He was murdered. Cleaning up. And here's the thing, y'all. If we do not use this day, this opportunity, to tell the truth about the legacy of Martin Luther King, shame on us. Because it will be snatched away. It will be remembered as the day that a lot of white folks that have done harm to the community of African descent, folks like Francis Lay, a lot of black folks that have done harm to the community of African descent, like Craig Williams, here in the city of St. Louis, Condoleezza Rice nationally, George Bush nationally, fake folks, FFs, fake folks. Now let me give you an example of what else is going to be done to. I say this. Anybody who opens their mouth to say a word about Martin Luther King today, who doesn't say anything about this illegal war, who doesn't say anything about racism, I don't mean in passing. I mean, if your speech ain't about this illegal war, if your speech ain't about the virulent racism that continues to exist in this town, in this time, in this country, and if you don't talk about the classism that Katrina has exposed to those who said it didn't exist, then you need to shut up and get the heck up off the stage, because you're wasting air and you're wasting time and you're lying. It ain't about little black boys and little black girls and little white boys and little white girls holding hands. Ain't never been about that. Ain't never been about that. Right now, there is a bitter dispute going on. What has been hailed at the nation's largest Martin Luther King speech, or largest Martin Luther King march.
people are calling for a boycott of this march. Why? I'm telling you, if you don't hold on to your history and tell the truth of your history, it will be snatched up from you and used for an agenda that doesn't have anything to do with you. You're trying to fly some damn planes, fighter jets, flying over the Martin Luther King parade. Excuse me. The man that got death threats for his opposition to the war, his parade will now have war machines as part of it? The Reverend Herman Price, chairman of the city's Martin Luther King Commission, said the flyover was meant to honor King, and he's dismayed by the divisiveness it has caused. It depends on how you look at it. Some say the planes represent war, bombs, and death, but at the same time, those planes can also represent our freedom and peace. Kiss my grits. I gotta go. I gotta take a break. I gotta go. I gotta go cussing fuss, because that's some baloney.
Turn on the television. I'm watching Martin Luther King, who had a dream. Oh, so take this dream and apply it to your life. Even though we know the ghetto's rough, but we got to keep your head up.
Keep your head up.
'Cause the death will come. And look to the sun, even when the darkness shall come.
Morning, St. Louis, 32 minutes after the hour, 6 o'clock at AM 920 WPNU. I'm Howard Morton with a look at this hour's traffic and weather. This hour's traffic is sponsored by TV Guide Channel. Northbound 67 and V, look for an overturned tractor trailer. Everything's being detoured up and over the overpass. Northbound 55 from 141 to Merrimack Bottom, an accident reported. Eastbound 44 from Antire and Merrimack River Bridge, look for normal traffic. Eastbound 40 from Mason to Hanley, looks good. Eastbound 70 from 370 all the way there to the expressway, no problems report there. Northbound 270 from Sappington to Doherty Ferry is on the move. Westbound 270 from Lilac all the way into Washington, a little bit, or West Portion. Look for no problems there as well. Eastbound 70 from K to 79, traffic is building but still moving well. Westbound 5570 at the Poplar Street Bridge, normal traffic. Westbound 64 at 5570 split looks good. And westbound Kingbridge traffic from Cleves Landing, everything is on the move there. Northbound Route 3 from the Poplar Street Bridge, those ramps are looking good as well. This hour's traffic has been sponsored by TV Guide Channel. See Golden Globe's biggest stars, arrivals with the queens of the red carpet. Watch Joan and Melissa live tonight at 5 on TV Guide Channel. Visit TVGuide.com for listings. Now, taking a look at your WGNU forecast for today, tomorrow, and for Wednesday. Partly sunny, a chance of showers this afternoon, high around 60. Rain likely this evening, then rain and snow likely after late overnight. No snow accumulations are possible. Low should be in the mid-30s. Tuesday, much colder, cloudy, a chance of rain and snow, high in the mid to upper 30s. Tuesday evening, colder, mostly cloudy in the evening, becoming partly cloudy overnight with a low in the mid-20s. Then on Wednesday, partly cloudy skies with a high in the mid-40s. Currently at the studios of AM 920 WGNU, we have clear skies and 40 degrees. Lambert Field is also reporting 40 as well. Stay tuned for more of Liz Brown and the award-winning Wake Up Call. Is up next. We'll take another look at your news, traffic, and weather in the 7 o'clock hour. I'm Howard Morton for AM 920 WGNU.
This is Dr. Laura Schlesinger. Join me every Monday through Friday from 2 to 4 on Radio Free St. Louis, AM 920 WGNU, and get a new attitude.
Diabetes is a killer. After I was diagnosed, I had no pain. I didn't feel sick, so I didn't listen to my doctor. Then it struck. I had a heart attack, then a stroke, and I was only 49. If only I'd known. If only I'd listened.
The complications of diabetes often go undiagnosed and are far more serious than you might think. Most people with diabetes also have high blood pressure and cholesterol, which can cause severe heart damage. In fact, 2 out of 3 people with diabetes die from heart disease or stroke. But you can reduce your risk of heart disease and stroke by lowering your blood sugar, blood pressure, and cholesterol. Learn how. Call 1-800-DIABETES for your free diabetes survival guide. Choose to live.
It's not too late. Don't let diabetes destroy your life.
The Contemporary Arts Museum at 3750 Washington Boulevard in St. Louis presents the Great Rivers Biennial starting on Saturday, January 21st. This awards program identifies emerging visual artists in the St. Louis region. Admission is up to $5. To find out more, call 314-535-4660. News to you from WGNU.
What you need to know, when you need to know it. The award-winning Wake-Up Call with Liz Brown.
Welcome back, welcome back, welcome back. What's your number, baby? 454-0400 is my phone number. 454-6609 is my fax. My toll-free long-distance number is 1-877-920-WGNU. That's 1-877-920-WGNU. And if you want to email me, please do that at Liz Brown. Or revolution@lizbrown.com. Get up. Get to me. You're on the Wake-Up Call. Good morning.
How you doing, Liz?
I'm outstanding.
Well, that was heartbreaking to hear Friday. I believe that was Friday, either Thursday or Friday, was the lady talking about the Katrina situation.
Vanessa, will you, and your voice is dropping out, so could you stay on your phone, please?
I'm sorry. It must be I'm talking too low.
Okay.
The thing that's really disturbing to me is we have a lot of that, you know, I consider, you know, false Christians around here. Some of them work for the station. But I don't hear the true Christians, you know, speaking out and saying, hey, these folks don't represent us. I really don't hear that. And I think it's time for, you know, people who consider themselves Christians who do call this station to let everyone know that, that these folks do not represent them, you know. I don't know that, and I'm pretty sure, well, I know that there are teachings against the idolization of things, people. But this is going on with this president that we have. We have people who have idolized him and say that, well, he's called to do this by God. And I think, you know, people need to speak up and say, hey, these people do not represent us.
All right. Okay.
I don't know. What do you think about that?
I think that people should be evaluated by their words and by their deeds. And anybody that maintains that they have a relationship with God to justify spying on people, to justify... I have an article in front of me where George Bush rejects a suggestion by Germany's new leader that the United States close the prison at Guantanamo Bay, that boy George continues to say he can spy on Americans, that he can lie about what he knew, when he knew, it and how much he knew. I think that someone that maintains that they have a close relationship with God, despite all of that, is someone that everybody should question, particularly when they have their finger on the button and determine the quality of lives that we have.
Right.
Thanks for your
And one other thing, Liz, before I go, and maybe you can check on this. I heard somewhere that there was a UN resolution that was passed that the United States went against, and it had something to do with a very dangerous biological weapon that the United States decided to produce, even though it was banned by the UN.
Okay, I don't
know. Can you check on that? And if,
probably and not. What you can do is check on it for me and email it to me.
I can try. I don't know if there's anything I can get online.
All right.
I can try.
All right. Thanks for your call. 454-0400 is my phone number. 454-6609 is my fax. My toll-free long-distance number is 1-877-920-WGNU. You're on the wake-up call.
Happy birthday, Liz.
Thank you.
What a privilege to be born on the same day as Martin Luther King, huh?
It's amazing. It's amazing.
He was a great man. I think you do a wonderful job there with all the information that you give us.
Thank you.
Have a good day. Yeah?
Well, before you go, let me ask you something. Since the world is celebrating the birthday of Martin Luther King, and his actual birthday was yesterday, what is your feeling about the direction that Martin Luther King celebrations are going in the year 2006?
Oh, I don't like them at all. What they've done, they've perverted them. Mm. You know, so much racism is involved in what a lot of these people are doing, and it had nothing to do with what a lot of these groups are doing. They're doing just the opposite of what Martin Luther King would have of embraced.
Mm. Absolutely. And particularly the article that I'm including in my discussion this morning, that Martin Luther King would have embraced war planes flying over his parade. That's insanity.
It certainly is
insanity.
But see, you know, that's a sign of the times, you know, because things are just waxing worse and worse, and things are just getting out of focus. There are things that what's right, it looks wrong, and what's wrong looks right, so... You know, it's just a sign of the times.
Thanks.
And that guy, and I want to, you know, I was listening to your guy. You know, there's scripture that talks about how God set kings up and take them out, set them up and take them out. George Bush is in there for a reason. I mean, we all have to vote and do all of these things. But, you know, he's in there for a reason.
All right now.
Thanks. Okay, you have a good day, Liz.
Thanks for your call.
Okay, bye-bye.
454-0400 is my phone number. Get up. Get to me. There are so many times that I have shaken my head this year in disbelief of where we are and the things that come out people's mouths. It's just, it's breathtaking. And to read this story coming out of San Antonio, that a Martin Luther King speech or Martin Luther King march that is supposedly one of the largest in the nation, that two fighter jets from the 99th Flying Training Squadron will zoom over the park at the end of the 3-mile march from Martin Luther King Drive to Iowa Street. It's just insane. Reverend Herman Price, the chairman of the Martin Luther King Commission, said the flyover was meant to honor King. Then why don't you just have regular planes? Why do you have war planes? Why do you have war planes? And one city councilman, Sheila McNeil, whose district includes the march route, said the flyover is exactly what King would have wanted. I think the military plays too significant of a role in our community for us to ignore them and not include them in this march. They are the reason we have peace. And this is Martin Luther King's peace march. Did we move to La La Land and nobody, you know, let everybody know? Are we now residing in La La Land? planes that drop bombs are, it's about peace. It's about peace. Car phone.
Hi, Liz. How are you this morning?
I'm outstanding.
I just had to call in to comment about those planes flying over Martin Luther King celebration. It's so hard for me to understand how people can twist a message that was so clear. I mean, if anybody stood for nonviolence, it was Martin Luther King. And for that message to have gotten lost in just a couple, in a few decades.
It's scary as hell, isn't it?
It is unbelievable to me how the media people take things over and twist and manipulate.
But it's not just media people, John. These are elected officials that are making decisions to twist and pervert what Martin Luther King was all about to their political advantage. Like what you're going to see with the Martin Luther King parade today, you're going to see Francis Slay, who has done more to destroy the community of African descent than anybody before him, anybody in recent memory.
No, you're absolutely right. It's the, you know, people who have control, who have access to the media and who put out the messages, I guess is what I meant. But, you know, for years I went to Martin Luther King celebration, and I would do things like, you know, pass out flyers for current ongoing issues to try to get a message across. But, you know, on another level, I always felt like, well, here I am adding to the crowd, which is bearing witness to these, you know, people being able to stand up and give a false message. Mm. And this year I'm going to work today. You know, I decided, well, I have limited time to take off from work, and Thursday there's a vote on civilian oversight in the Board of Aldermen, St. Louis Board of Aldermen. And I'm going to take off on Thursday and go down to the Board of Aldermen to bear witness to an ongoing issue.
And that's a
being out there today.
And that's a powerful thing. That's a powerful thing.
I hope people can find a cause to be involved in honor of Martin Luther King.
And act in that cause.
And act on that, because there are plenty of causes ongoing now instead of wallowing in history and
fake history. Fake history.
Right. Yeah, we all need to know our history.
That's right. And
the way it gets perverted is unbelievable.
Thanks for your call, and thanks for that, John.
Sure. Take care.
We're going to take a break, folks. My name is Liz Brown. This is The Wake Up Call. You need to get to me. We have much to talk about. Stay with me.
Love makes me treat you the way that I do. Gee, baby, ain't I good to you? There's nothing too good for a boy, that's so true. Gee, baby, ain't I good to you?
This is your wake-up call, Global News Update. Dateline Baltimore. The state of Maryland enacted a law last Thursday that is aimed directly at Walmart. The Fair Share Health Care Law requires large private companies to spend at least 8% of their payroll on health benefits for their workers. Robert Ehrlich, the Republican governor, had previously vetoed that bill, but both houses of the legislature overrode his veto. Specifically, the law compels companies that have over 10,000 workers in Maryland to put at least 8% of their payroll on health care. If they don't, they will have to make a mandatory contribution to the state's Medicaid fund. Ehrlich says the law is horrible and will cost jobs and stymie economic development. Walmart says the law really has nothing to do with health care, but only seeks to placate special interests in Washington, namely labor unions. Massachusetts Senator Ted Kennedy has introduced a bill in the Senate that will require companies that have at least 50 of their employees who get tax-funded health care to be publicly identified. And Dateline London. The British government has given up on a plan to close certain places of worship that perpetrate what it labels as extremist doctrines. Prime Minister Tony Blair announced shortly after the July bombings in London took place that he was calling for a law that would allow courts to close places of worship where extremist terrorist activities were shown to be taking place. Home Secretary Charles Clark said it would not be pursued at this time now because police agencies said it probably would be useless and create poor relations with the Muslim community. He said it would simply drive such activity underground even deeper and make it more difficult to be kept track of. This is your wake-up call global news update.
Every weekend, your gospel voice of choice can be found on the World Wide Web at WGNU.net.
Use your exercise bike for more than a clothes rack. Find out how by attending the St. Clair Life Fitness Fair, 10 a.m. to 9:30 p.m., Friday and Saturday, January 20th and 21st, and from noon to 6, Sunday, January 22nd, at St. Clair Square in Fairview Heights. More than just another health fair, it's a showcase for retailers, service groups, healthcare professionals, and fitness pros, all ready to help you get in shape and improve your life. Night Magic Entertainment brings you music all weekend long. WGNU will be broadcasting from the fair on Friday. See a variety of singers, dancers, aerobic demonstrations. Enjoy a healthy snack. Stop by the center court to register for one of dozens of great prizes. Come on, you can do it. Get moving to the St. Clair Life Fitness Fair, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, January 20th, 21st, and 22nd. Hosted by St. Clair Square in Fairview Heights. Sponsored in part by Night Magic Entertainment and Radio Free St. Louis, AM 920, WGNU. Get more details at sbcshows.com. This is a specialized promotional contest production.
The struggle for fairness on the award-winning Wake Up Call with Liz Brown.
Boom, clack, boom, clack. I want a rim shot, hey. Diggy, diggy, a rim shot, hey. Come on, a rim shot, hey. Diggy, diggy, a rim shot, hey.
I said I need to hear the
rim shot.
Welcome back. Welcome back. I'm Liz Brown. This is the Wake Up Call. My number here is 1-877-920-WGNU. You can email me at revolution@lizbrown.com. Check out my website at lizbrown.com. Check out the Kona Stowe. Get some t-shirts. Get some. Check it out. Check it out. Also, we are archived daily at whiterosesociety.org. Get to us. whiterosesociety.org. The Liz Brown Wake Up Call show is archived daily there. We're streamed at WGNU.net and LizBrown.com. We are also iPodded at WhiteRoseSociety.org. Get to me. Carphone.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I love when you say corner stove. That's so cute.
You like that.
But my dad and my mom always, on Martin Luther King Day, they always had us do something productive and constructive for either ourselves or the community, because my dad always said Martin Luther King died for us to have jobs and be able to be educated, then maybe reach out and help someone. I am going to work today. My company is not closed. They give us floater holidays to decide if we want to use whenever we want to use it, because they try to be as diverse as possible, I guess. But I'm in a position of hiring individuals, and I always make it a point to either post positions on a diverse website or try to hire someone of color. Now, some people may not think that is that important or that doesn't support King's struggle, but I think economics and education for us, we should continue to try to support King's struggle by doing that and reach out. And I also signed up for a mentor program to assist young ladies whose parents are in prison. And I just think if everybody takes an organization or reaches out to help someone, maybe help fold clothes at a homeless shelter or teach someone of color to support King's cause. And that's the way I've always been raised to look at it.
I think that you have to act, to engage in actions as opposed to celebratory things, because the battle isn't over.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I dare say that the battle is worse than it was when Martin Luther King was alive.
I agree. I think the battle is worse. I don't think we realize the battle's worse.
That's one of the things that makes it worse.
Well, yeah, I think we get comfortable. We want to be accepted. We get a little bit of a crumb, and we think that's a fabulous thing. But I don't know. We were just chatting. Nothing has happened really positive for us since the Civil Rights Amendment.
Thanks so much for your call.
Thank you.
All right, take care. 454-0400 is my phone number. Get to me. Car phone.
Hello?
Yes.
Is this Liz?
Yes, it is.
Liz, hi. My name's Steve.
Hi, Steve.
One of the most tragic things is how the American psyche has been sidelined or actually people have just totally been deceived as to what's really going on. Mm-hmm. The very thing that people like Martin Luther King spoke out against is just getting worse and worse. Mm-hmm. It's encroaching more and more on the lives of people.
Mm-hmm.
Martin Luther King was murdered with a bullet, a solid bullet, but there continues to be people who are being attacked and murdered by much more high-tech means in this day and age.
Mm.
Not only activists, but just people in general, the common people who have no way of defending themselves, who just want to live their lives and take care of their families and mind their own business and help their friends.
What about the bodies floating down and bodies floating in the floodwaters of Katrina, and no governmental response to that?
Right, and if you want to look at it, some of the other things that are happening, I don't know if you heard. Anything about recent attempts to legalize experiments on homeless children where they would be able to use whatever things that they're trying to test out on homeless children. I think it was the attempt was thwarted, fortunately.
Well, actually, it's going. We've done a number of shows on the rules that are being changed to allow for the experimentation on children. Period.
Right.
We did a particular show on how foster children in New York were experimented on with AIDS drugs,
yep.
And the government there said that even blood relatives couldn't get their babies out of this program. They had their children taken away from if they didn't put these foul experimental drugs that killed them. And
right.
Harm them in their bodies. It's horrible.
Archived? Because I missed that show.
That is archived. That is an archived show. Absolutely. That was one of my intern shows, actually, this past summer.
Okay, I definitely want to listen to that. And I know the name of a gentleman in New York who has more information on this
mm-hmm.
and on other types of experiments that are being conducted against not only children, but... poor people, older people, handicapped people.
Steve, could you do me a favor? Could you email me that information?
Revolution@lizbrown.com.
Yes, and that's L-I-Z-Z Brown.
L-I-Z-Z.
Yes.
LIZZBrown.com.
That's correct.
Jeanette, okay, I will, and I can email you his name and phone number if you want to get in touch with
absolutely.
Him.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Right on, Liz.
All right, thank you so much, Steve. Take
bye.
Care. 454-0400 is my phone number. You're on the wake-up call. Good morning.
Hello, Liz. How are you this morning?
I'm outstanding.
Hello?
Yes, I'm outstanding.
Okay. You go down there today and turn on the camera, and those people are out there smiling and laughing and cheering. The next day, you go out there and try to find them same people to bust a grape. You can't do it.
Mm.
I used to go out there and march with them, and the next day I asked them to come go help get Ellen Reason over out of prison, and I told them to sign some paper so they can give them to the people they was putting out there in our public forest to see, and yeah, I don't know him. I said, you just got to campaign for him. How you know you don't know him? Well, I said, come telling me, no, I don't know the man. You do it. I said, you know the man, and he wouldn't even do it. But turn the camera off, and he's gone.
It's an opportunity for people to climb up on the dead body of Martin Luther King and say something about themselves.
That's right.
Where were
these people at when the school was being closed down?
That is correct. Thank you so much.
Okay, Liz, thank you.
In our next hour, we're going to be talking to the writer of an article, Bulldozing the Dead in New Orleans. And I think this is an appropriate topic on the celebratory day. For Martin Luther King's birthday, I'm Liz Brown. I'll be back after the news. Stay with me.
It is time for us to use our power. Please do not ask for power. Nobody is going to give it to you. You were born with power.
shot and was killed tonight in Memphis.
I will never say that progress is being made. If you stick a knife in my back 9 inches and pull it out 6 inches, there's no progress. If you pull it all the way out, that's not progress. The progress is healing the wound that's below me.
I think I'm hearing revolution in the air.
920 on your AM dial, WGNU, Granite City, St. Louis.
Latest from ABC News. I'm Daria Albinger. How old is too old to be put to death? That's a question the U.S. Supreme Court may have to answer. It concerns a 76-year-old California man.
Clarence Ray Allen's attorneys are appealing to the U.S. Supreme Court, claiming a man of Allen's age and failing health cannot be put to death. He is deaf, blind, and he uses a wheelchair. Jonathan Turley is a professor at George Washington University.
When you have someone who has to be wheeled into a death chamber, you can hardly argue that this is about societal protection. What you're left with is retribution.
Allen ordered the murders of three people while he was already in prison serving a life sentence. Alex Stone, ABC News, Los Angeles.
The demonstrations in Pakistan over a U.S. airstrike that killed 17 people, possibly including the number two man in Al-Qaeda. It will take a while, though, for DNA tests to determine if one of the bodies is that of Ayman al-Zarwahi. Is Martin Luther King Jr.'s dream any closer to being a reality?
Let freedom ring from the prodigious hilltops of New Hampshire. Let freedom ring.
It depends on who you ask. Some say we have a long way to go. King would be 77 years old today. First Lady Laura Bush is witnessing history in Liberia. The country founded by freed American slaves has sworn in its first female president, Ellen Johnson Sirleaf, a Harvard-educated economist. She's also Africa's first female elected leader. Well, it's almost Mardi Gras time in New Orleans, but some residents are saying, you know what, let the good times roll next year, like this woman.
My house is totally gone, and they acting as if nobody even lived on the other side of this world. You know, they just threw us to the wolves, and I ain't liking it at all.
She lives in a part of the city was hit especially hard by Hurricane Katrina. This is ABC News.
You're now seeing live pictures of a lunar module.
Thousands marching on Washington as
a generation as unique as this needs a new generation of personal financial planning. We are the personal advisors of Ameriprise Financial, formerly American Express Financial Advisors. To set up an appointment with a local financial advisor today, call 1-800-AMERIPRISE. That's 1-800-263-7477. Ameriprise Financial Services Number, NASD and SIPC.
You buy ginger ale at Walmart's everyday low prices. It arrived on a Walmart truck and traveled over 140 miles from a Walmart distribution center, where it was processed by over 1,000 Walmart associates and moved over 10 miles of conveyor, with over 230,000 cases that same day. Why send ginger ale through one of the most efficient distribution systems ever conceived? To keep prices low for you. And we're all proud to be a part of it. Walmart. Always low prices. Always.
Our next show is going to be about Senator McCarthy.
Good night and good luck is one of the favorites going into tonight's Golden Globe Awards. George Clooney's historical tale of journalist Edward R. Murrow could be a runaway winner. The one to beat, the experts say, though, is Brokeback Mountain. The tale of gay cowboys has 7 nominations, including Best Actor and Best Picture. The long holiday weekend's not over yet, but it looks like one picture is a slam dunk for box office winner.
Coach Haskins is starting 5 black players, a first in NCAA championship history.
The true story of the basketball team that broke the color barrier at the NCAA championship is the new box office champ. Glory Road earned an estimated $13.5 million through Sunday, but it's not a slam dunk. Close behind,
I Got 3 Weeks to Live,
Queen Latifah's comedy, Last Holiday, followed by Hoodwinked, a computer-animated update of Little Red Riding Hood.
I want to know about the little girl in the red hood.
Dave Alpert, ABC News, Hollywood.
Daria Albinger, ABC News.
With a WGNU News Report, I'm Peyton Colston. This update is brought to you by the Illinois Lottery.
Taking a look at our news this hour, authorities believe a man shot in a North St. Louis attack is the killer of the teen he was originally thought to have been helping. No charges have been filed yet against the man, who remains hospitalized with a gunshot wound. Police believe the man fatally stabbed 17-year-old Merle McCulley Thursday afternoon outside the St. Louis Q restaurant near Goodfellow and West Florissant, and was then shot by an unidentified gunman. The shooter remains at large. It may be a few months before a man accused of killing a 60-year-old Granite City woman is returned to the area to face charges. 41-year-old Brian Gary was arrested on a parole violation a short time after he allegedly killed Carol Newby, and police say he'll serve time on that violation in Menard before being returned to Madison County. Newby was found beaten and suffocated inside her Granite City home on January 11th. Police believe Gary and Newby knew each other, and that she probably led him into the home voluntarily. In Fenton, a teenager hit by a car while skateboarding will be laid to rest this week. 14-year-old Kyle O'Neill died Friday of injuries he suffered on January 7th when he was hit by a car on Highway 141. Visitation for the Rockwood South Middle School student will be held tomorrow afternoon at J.B. Smith Funeral Home. A funeral mass will take place Wednesday morning at St. Paul Church in Fenton. A memorial trust fund has been set up at the U.S. Bank branch in Fenton. In other news, a Marine from Woodlawn, Illinois, has been killed in action in Iraq. According to the Mount Vernon Sentinel, 19-year-old Lance Corporal Jonathan Kyle Price died Friday while on guard detail in Ramadi. Price had been set to return home from Iraq next month. A special education teacher is accused of sexually abusing three of her students. Kathy Hemminghouse is on administrative leave from her job as a special school district teacher at Ferguson Middle School. Prosecutors claim Hemminghouse had sexual contact with three students between last October and last week, with some of the alleged abuse taking place on school property. Hemminghouse is being held at the St. Louis County Jail on $500,000 bond and is charged with statutory sodomy. That's a report of WGNU News brought to you by the Illinois Lottery. Play daily, play nightly, play when you need a smile, play for the rush. No matter how you play, play the Illinois Lottery. Have a ball, have fun, play responsibly. I'm Peyton Colston reporting WGNU News.
Good morning, St. Louis. 7 minutes after the hour, 7 o'clock at AM 920 WGNU. I'm Howard Morton with a look at this hour's traffic and weather. This hour's traffic is sponsored by your Greater St. Louis Area Toyota Dealers. Northbound 67 at Route B, the overturned tractor trailer has traffic being detoured up and over the overpass there. Northbound 55 from 141 Merrimack Bottom. That accident's cleared. There are no delays. Eastbound 44 from Bowles to 270 looks good. Eastbound 40 from Timberlake Manor to Brentwood, no problems there. Eastbound 70 from Zumbel all the way into St. Charles Rock Road is on the move. Northbound 270 from Gravoy to Big Bend is lighter than normal. Westbound 270 from Canal Bridge all the way to West Florissant, no problems to report there. Eastbound 70 is busy, but moving from K all the way to 79. Westbound 40 from Hampton to Hanley is lighter than normal. Westbound 5570 at Poplar Street Bridge is slow traffic on the Missouri end. Westbound 64 to 5570 merge looks good, and westbound Kingbridge traffic at the Cleeds Landing looks good. And northbound Route 3, those ramps onto the Poplar Street Bridge are looking good. Northbound 67, the ramp to 110, there's an accident reported, but it's apparently minor. That is a look at this hour's traffic. This hour's traffic has been sponsored by your Greater St. Louis Area Toyota Dealers. Toyota owners, winterize your car at a St. Louis Metro Toyota dealer. Radiator, drain, and fill, visual inspection, and battery check, all for just $39.95. That's Toyota value. See dealer for details. Now taking a look at your WGNU forecast for today, tomorrow, and Wednesday. Partly sunny, a chance of showers this afternoon, high around 60 this evening. Rain likely until early morning, then rain or snow likely. No accumulations are expected. The low should be in the mid-30s. Tuesday, much colder, mostly cloudy, chance of rain or snow, the high in the upper 30s. Tuesday evening, colder, mostly cloudy, and evening becoming partly cloudy with a low in the mid-20s. Then on Wednesday, partly cloudy skies, a high in the mid-40s. Currently at the studios of AM 920 WGNU, we have 41 degrees. Lambert Fields reporting 42, both under clear skies. Stay tuned for more of Liz Brown and the award-winning Wake Up Call. That's up next. We'll take another look at your traffic and weather in the bottom of the 7 o'clock hour. I'm Howard Morton for AM 920 WGNU.
I think I'm hearing revolution in the air. I think I'm hearing revolution in the air. Help me, brothers. Help me, sisters. I think I'm hearing revolution in the air. Help me, brothers. It is time for us to use our power. Please do not ask for power. Nobody is going to give it to you. You were born with power.
Some very sad news for all of you. The people who love peace all over the world. Martin Luther King was shot and was killed tonight in Memphis.
I will never say that progress is being made. You take a knife in my back 9 inches and pull it out 6 inches, there's no progress. You pull it all the way out, that's not progress. The progress is healing the wound that's below me.
I think I'm hearing revolution in the air. Tell me, brothers, how can you stand?
But the hard truth is that not everyone is sharing in this city's splendor and glory. There are more poor than ever. More families in trouble. More and more people who need help but can't find it. A struggle against the common enemies of man. Tyranny, poverty, disease, and war itself.
We believe that all men are created equal. Yet many are denied equal dignity.
And so we say to all in this nation who dare listen to us, black, white, Jew, Gentile, Asian, Latino, that we are brothers and sisters in a long and difficult struggle.
Welcome back, welcome back, welcome back to the Wake Up Call. This is Liz Brown, living my life as an African and loving it. 454-0400 is my phone number. 454-6609 is my fax. My toll-free long-distance number is 1-877-920-WDNU. That's 1-877-920-WGNU. We are also archived at whiterosesociety.org. My email is revolution@lizbrown.com. We're streamed at wgnu.net, lizbrown.com. This is the day that has been set aside as a holiday. And I've always been uncomfortable with the characterization of this day as a holiday. Because holiday is the wrong thing to use for a man who was murdered. A man who died as a result of a bullet being put in him. A man who challenged racism, a man who set the flame, if you will, to the racist policies, practices, attitudes, understandings, worldviews of far too many in this nation. And when I see people in the city of St. Louis, where the station studio is broadcasting from, I see them marching down the street. I see too many people using Martin Luther King, the anniversary of the birth of Martin Luther King, as an opportunity to say something about themselves. That is not so. It is a lie. It is perverted that we live at a time where the anniversary of the birth of a man who was murdered because of racism in this country. It's perverted that that anniversary is being utilized. I mean, there are so many folks that have engaged in such racist, such classist, such sexist behavior, running around trying to make certain that their fat faces are featured prominently on the photo ops of Martin Luther King Day celebrations to say something about themselves that ain't so. What would Martin Luther King say about, let me put it this way. Anybody in America who is giving a speech, a presentation on this day, at this time, in this place, and they're going to talk about Martin Luther King. Anyone who opens their mouth to say anything better say something about this illegal, wicked, lawless war. Better say something about the profound racism that grips this country. Better say something about the extraordinary thing that God has shown us through Katrina. How poor people don't matter. How black people don't matter. I read an article a while back that was published on January 6th, written by a man by the name of Scott Beam, and I think that it is an appropriate thing to have this discussion on this day, because I bet you a nickel that you can count on one hand in the city of St. Louis the number of Martin Luther King's celebration speeches that uses the R word, racism, that uses the C word, classism, and uses the W word, warmongering, in their speeches today. Instead, we're going to hear about little black boys and little black girls and little white boys and little white girls holding hands. We need to talk about the reality of the world that we live in. I'm going to say it. It's worse. I'm a woman of African descent, and I'm here to tell you it's worse. It's worse. And if you read the story written by Scott Beam, you'll understand why I say that. And you'll have to come to the same conclusion. I just want to share with you the first paragraph, so that you can feel me on this day that folks are out there celebrating the birth of Martin Luther King. What would Martin say that we should be doing on this day? Scott Beam wrote, Joyce Green died on the roof of her lower Ninth Ward home as her New Orleans neighborhood flooded during Hurricane Katrina. helplessly. Her son watched her die as the water rushed dangerously below them. Just last week, he was able to return. Her son was able to return to their collapsed home on Tennessee Street for the first time. And he found her skeletal remains amidst the ruins. He was able to identify them because they were wrapped in the clothes she was wearing the day she died. Scott Bean, welcome to the wake-up call. Good morning. Scott, welcome.
Good morning. Good morning.
How are you this morning?
I'm all right. How are you?
I'm outstanding. Scott, You were in New Orleans, and you talked to the son of Joyce Greene.
I wasn't able to talk to the son of Joyce Greene, no. I was there in the city when the story broke.
Tell us about how you came to find this story. Let me back up a little bit.
Sure.
What were you doing in New Orleans?
I was in New Orleans for about 2 weeks. I was working with the People's Hurricane Relief Fund and Oversight Coalition. This is a group that grew out of Community Labor United, which had existed in the city before the hurricane for many years. It's a black-led organization in the city with local roots that has been working to address the needs of people of the city, especially organizing around issues of poverty and housing and those sorts of issues, which became exacerbated after the hurricanes. And so the organization shifted gears in order to address the needs of the people immediately after the hurricane.
And when you talk to the folks in this organization, what are some of their issues and their concerns? Because this is as bad as it was prior to Hurricane Katrina, this has got to be overwhelming for the folks that live there.
And certainly, the main issue that's attempting to be addressed is that the city just has not included the people who were most affected by the hurricane in the decision-making process that concerns reconstruction of the city. The people who were most affected, the people who were abandoned by not just the city but the federal government, the people who were shot at, who were abandoned on top of rooftops, the people who were able to survive that and somehow make it through the days in the Superdome, the convention center. Now they're being subject to another level of violence against them, which is the taking away of their homes and their property, not being allowed to return to the city, even though the mayor has encouraged people to do so. They haven't provided the means or the resources to make that feasible.
Describe for us the Ninth Ward. We hear a lot, those of us that are not from New Orleans or haven't been to New Orleans, or when we were, we didn't visit the Ninth Ward. Tell us about the Ninth Ward.
Well, the Ninth Ward is a large area. The lower Ninth Ward was an area most devastated by the hurricane due to the breach in the levee, several breaches in the levee of the Industrial Canal, which was also affected by a huge barge that was illegally left in the canal. It was moored there, and it broke loose and went into the neighborhood, causing great destruction. Now, it's also a very interesting neighborhood in that it's very historic, having very long roots with a lot of people coming from there, people like Fats Domino, a lot of entertainers have gotten their start there, grew up there. It's also really unique in that it has the highest level of black homeownership in the nation, but at the same time, it's not an upper-income level. So you have a very interesting combination of homeownership, but middle or lower to middle-income level housing.
And I dare say that is not a story that has broken through in the telling of the Ninth Ward. It seems like the stories that we hear about the Ninth Ward are akin to there wasn't much there anyway. It's a constant devaluating of the Ninth Ward, almost like in a preparation for the elimination of it.
Of course. I mean, people in New Orleans are fairly aware of this, but in terms of how it's playing out nationally and trying to politically make this a priority for demolition rather than reconstruction, which is what the city seems to want, if not at the federal level as well. One of the easiest ways to make that possible is to paint the picture that this is an impoverished area, not only economically, which isn't even the case in all situations, but culturally as well, that it was a wasteland before the hurricane. So why would we want to rebuild that?
Well, I remember reading Bill Roberti's comments about the schools after the hurricane. Bill Roberti, who has been hired as a consultant for the public school system there in New Orleans, saying that this is a great opportunity. The schools were so horrible. Now we can start fresh. That's kind of the attitude that's going on with the Ninth Ward.
Sure, and just generally across the city. A GOP strategist said a very similar comment right after the hurricane hit, saying that we couldn't clean up public housing, but God did. Mm. So these are the sort of sentiments that have been going on since immediately after the hurricane.
One of the issues that you bring up in your article, and you mentioned it just a few seconds ago, is about this barge. Tell us about this barge and what it did in the community.
Well, it's actually quite a mystery that hasn't been fully investigated, which is part of the issue, which we'll get into more in terms of the city's decision to start bulldozing this area, the Lower Ninth. There has not been a full investigation of what happened during Hurricane Katrina, what happened in the Lower Ninth Ward, what happened, why were there these breaches in the Industrial Canal. There's a lot of speculation. But no one has taken full ownership for why that barge was sitting in the canal. I've seen it. It went over the canal. It went into the neighborhood. There's a bus
How big is this?
Damage with the homes immediately adjacent to the canal. But it also allowed a lot of water to come through as well.
Could you describe this barge for us? When we talk about this thing, how big is this?
I'd say it's about 2 football fields long, perhaps. It's quite big in terms of width. I'd say it's about 2 houses wide.
And where is it sitting today?
If you go down to the Lower Ninth, it's still fairly close to where the actual canal is, but it's not in the canal. It's in the neighborhood.
Scott, who would, if there are no people that come back to the Ninth Ward, who would challenge the damage that was done by this barge?
That's a very good question. If you can keep the people away, if you don't allow them to come back and to even discuss what's happened and to organize them in order to push to have an investigation, which is what will be necessary because it's not going to happen voluntarily by the city or by the Army Corps of Engineers, or by the federal government. Exactly. It's the perfect way to make sure these types of questions aren't raised.
Getting back to the first part of your story about Joyce Green, how widespread, or can we even decide how widespread of an issue it is of people that died in their homes in the Ninth Ward and their bodies have not been found? And what's going on to locate those bodies?
This is another huge issue, and it's another issue that we don't have the answers to. There's certainly speculation that there's thousands of bodies that have not been identified. Now, they're not all in the Lower Ninth Ward, but this is the area that had the greatest amount of destruction. Obviously, Joyce Green was found just about 2 weeks ago now. There's certainly more bodies that are down there. People have not been allowed to return to the area. This December 1st was the first time that the area was reopened for anyone to enter, including residents and former residents. People haven't had the opportunity to return to their homes in most cases, so we certainly don't know. There hasn't been a full attempt to recuperate those bodies.
Well, clearly, if the son of Joyce Green just went and found it like that, what is prior to December 1st? Because December 1st is the date that the Ninth Ward residents were, some of them were able to come back. what was going on in the Ninth Ward? What activity was going on in the Ninth Ward? What reconstruction, what cleanup? What was going on in the Ninth Ward?
Well, if you go to the Lower Ninth today, you would probably be asking yourself those questions because it looks like the hurricane came through about 2 weeks ago or even a few days ago. Very, very little has been done. There has been, you know, a certain degree of debris removal from the streets, that sort of thing, but there's, you know, there's no electricity there. There's certain areas that were less affected than others. Some homeowners have been able to start gutting homes and starting that process. In general, in terms of the city's work, until this announcement that they wanted to just start demolishing homes without informing homeowners, very little had been done.
Do we know of any attempts to go in and to find bodies in the Lower Ninth Ward?
Not on any grand scale, no.
How can that be? What was the practice of locating bodies outside of the Lower Ninth?
That's a very good question. I don't exactly have the answer to that. That was something going on before I was there. All I can say is that in terms of the Lower Ninth, there's just no doubt about it. You can talk to anyone. Everyone is certainly convinced that there will only be more bodies found the more work is done down there.
Is there much reporting or much talk about the body count, or has it just been put to the side and we've done with the body count?
Well, I think like Katrina in general, there's been Katrina burnout across the nation. People have just sort of stopped talking about it outside of the city of New Orleans. Certainly people are talking about it there. It affects them. It isn't a body count for most individuals. It's a family member that hasn't been found. It's a friend that hasn't been located, neighbors don't know where their other neighbors are. They might be in Houston or St. Louis or in Philadelphia. And people oftentimes don't know if it's just a question of not having a phone number or if someone didn't make it.
We're going to take a break, folks. I'm talking to Scott Beam. He is a writer of an article, Bulldozing the Dead in New Orleans. He's a PhD student at the University of California, San Diego, and an activist. He's joining us from San Diego. I'm Liz Brown. This is the Wake Up Call. I'll be back.
But now I think I'm able to carry on. It's been a long time coming, but I know.
St. Louis, 32 minutes after the hour of 7 o'clock at AM 920 WGNU. I'm Howard Borden with this hour's traffic and weather. This hour's traffic is sponsored by Sonic, America's Drive-Ins. Northbound 67 at Route V, look for an overturned vehicle that has traffic detoured up and over the overpass. Eastbound 44 from Chrysler to Big Bend, everyone's flowing freely. Eastbound 40 between Mason Road and Big Bend is lighter than normal. Eastbound 70 from Mid River Mall away to Blanchett looks good. Northbound 270 at 55 and 44, nothing to report there. Westbound 270 from Lilac to Washington, Elizabeth, everything's on the move. Eastbound 70 is just crowded through the 79. Westbound 40 between Science Center and Hanley looks good. Westbound 5570 to Poplar Street Bridge, everything's flowing freely. Westbound 64 to 5570 Merge looks good. Westbound Kingbridge traffic from the Illinois Bank all the way on to Cleeds Landing, everything looks well there. Northbound Illinois, northbound Route 3 onto the Poplar Street Bridge, those ramps are looking good as well. That is a look at this hour's traffic. This hour's traffic has been sponsored by Sonic, America's Drive-In. Drive into Sonic this Tuesday night for half-price burgers. That's right, half-price. Get a classic Sonic burger for half the price from 5 p.m. till close on Tuesdays. It's not just good, it's Sonic good. Now, taking a look at your WGNU forecast for today, tomorrow, and Wednesday. Partly sunny, chance of showers this afternoon. High around 60 this evening. Look forward to rain likely until early morning, then rain and snow likely after midnight when no accumulation is expected. The low should be around the mid-30s. Tuesday, much colder, cloudy. Chance of rain and snow, high in the upper 30s. Tuesday evening, cloudy, colder, and then low in the mid-20s. Then on Wednesday, partly cloudy with a high in the mid-40s. Currently at the studios of AM 920 WGNU, we have 42 degrees under clear skies. Lambert Field is reporting 43. Stay tuned for more of Liz Brown and the award-winning Wake Up Call. It's up next. We'll take another look at your news, traffic, and weather in the 8 o'clock hour. I'm Howard Morton for AM 920 WGNU.
Radio Free St. Louis, AM 920 WGNU, is your station for talk radio with a difference. Call now for your turn on the air. The numbers are 314-454-0400 or toll-free 1-877-920-WGNU. Individual results may vary. Some restrictions apply.
Manny Jackson Associates and Western Union proudly present the spectacular Harlem Globetrotters, the unstoppable global force. Bring your family and be a part of history as the world-famous Harlem Globetrotters celebrate their 80th consecutive season. You'll be astonished by the athleticism and non-stop entertainment only the Harlem Globetrotters can provide. And don't forget to stick around for the post-game Harlem Globetrotters autograph session. It's your chance to interact with the world's most incredible athletes. Don't be left out. Join 120 million of your closest friends and experience the world's greatest basketball event, the unstoppable Harlem Globetrotters.
Coming to Savas Center Saturday and Sunday, January 28th and 29th at 2 p.m. Tickets on sale now at the Savas Center box office, 241-1888, and at Ticketmaster.com.
Is the IRS ruining your life? Are you afraid of losing everything? You can end the despair you feel right now. Get ready to write down an important phone number you're going to need to solve your IRS nightmare. The number is 800-376-9913.
Hello, I'm John Harris, president of J.K. Harris & Company, the nation's largest tax representation firm. IRS problems have a way of ruining every aspect of your life if you let them. Our former IRS agents and tax professionals have successfully negotiated settlements for thousands of our clients, saving them millions of dollars.
According to IRS statistics, the average settlement for accepted offers and compromise was between 12 and 15 cents per tax dollar owed, which means you could qualify to reduce your tax debt by as much as 85%. If you owe the IRS back taxes, call J.K. Harris at 800-376-9913. You may qualify to dramatically reduce your tax debt. Call 800-376-9913. 9913. That's 800-376-9913.
This is the award-winning Wake Up Call with Liz Brown. Don't leave home without it.
Every ghetto, every city, and suburban place I've been, made me recall my days in the New Jerusalem. You know it's hot, don't forget what you got. Looking back, looking back, looking back.
Welcome back, welcome back, welcome back to the Wake Up Call. This is Liz Brown. I am talking to Scott Veen. He's a writer. He's written an article, Bulldozing the Dead in New Orleans, and he's joining us from San Diego. Scott, welcome back.
Thank you very much.
Talk to us about the decision to demolish the homes in the Ninth Ward, the lower Ninth Ward. How did that come about? Walk us through that.
Right. On December 23rd, Greg Mefford, who is the city's chief technology officer in New Orleans, announced that about 2,500 homes out of 5,534 homes in the city that had been red tagged, which was a system that the city was using in order to determine the amount of destruction that each home had received. So there was green tags, yellow tags, and red tags, red tags being the most affected. So he announced that about 2,500 of these homes were being scheduled for immediate demolition. Now, the majority of these were in the lower Ninth Ward. The vast majority were in the lower Ninth Ward. And the city, although it made this announcement, was just sort of a small story that was reported in the Times-Picayune and papers in the area. But none of the affected residents were notified of the city's decision. Now, this is a very clear violation of due process. The government can simply not take away a person's property without following certain channels that ensure fairness and justice and this sort of thing. Now, this is guaranteed in the federal constitution by the Fifth Amendment, and this is also extended to the states in the 14th Amendment. And every state constitution has similar provisions, including the state of Louisiana.
So how did the residents of the Lower Ninth find out that their homes were, one, reg-tagged, and two, slated for demolition?
Well, they didn't. And so in that case, a lawsuit was filed.
Let me back up just a little bit. Did they even find out that their home was red-tagged?
In some cases, yes.
How did they do that?
Yeah, if the residents happen to be in the area, they may have had the opportunity to go to visit their home. And most of the red tag homes, although not all of them, actually have a little tag. It's a little piece of paper that's sort of an orangish red color that does state that the home is not livable, that the entry into the home is prohibited, these sorts of things. It says nothing about bulldozing them. This was not part of the plan when these tags were initially set up. Now, if people were outside of the city, yes, some of them may have been able to find out. Some of them may have even been informed. But what they would have been informed about was not that their homes were up for demolition. In fact, it was stated explicitly that this was not the case, that it was simply a category, that the house was being classified.
When we talk about that government cannot take your property without due process and there have to be rules in place, was there a rule or a process for the notification of any resident in New Orleans for their home to be red-tagged? What was the process that was in place?
Sure. Well, the Shaw Group, which was a group that was contracted out of Baton Rouge to make these assessments, is the group that was responsible for these classifications. And now this is sort of an issue because residents were just not involved in that process at all. And so what you have is a situation where an independent contractor has been brought in to the city to make these assessments. Now, this is something that needs to be done. However, residents have been excluded from the process from the very beginning, and it just seems like a grave injustice to not include them at all, including the final decision where this classification that they had no input on equals the demolition of their home, which they may not have even been aware was going on.
And don't we have the added component, Scott, that residents have only recently been allowed to come back in to even look at their homes in the Lower Ninth?
Exactly. Yeah, as we said earlier, the area was closed until December 1st. And most of these people are not in the New Orleans area. Many of them are in Houston, but many are even spread out farther than that, and many of them simply do not have the funds to return. This is something that could be facilitated by FEMA. FEMA is spending an awful lot of money providing workers down there with things like iPods and gadgets to make their lives more comfortable, at the same time that people most affected by the hurricane have been shut out from their city and their homes.
There was also a program that FEMA had that flew people back into New Orleans for the specific purpose of looking at their homes, checking out what is going on with their homes. How many people of the Ninth Ward, the Lower Ninth, were able to participate in that?
To my knowledge, very few, if none. And as I understood it, that the FEMA flyback program, which actually expired at the end of the year, was actually used more, ironically, to assist people who wanted to move to other areas of the country, to give them one-way tickets in order to do that, and to provide them transportation to actually get farther away from the city.
So we're talking about the red-tagged homes are in the Lower Ninth, roughly represent half of the red-tagged homes in the city of New Orleans.
Exactly. Now, what happened after the city made this announcement right before Christmas, which was quite appropriate for the way things have been going in New Orleans, on December 28th, right after the holiday, Bill Quigley, who is a professor of law at Loyola University in New Orleans, and also a lawyer who's been successful in filing suits and getting restraining orders on evictions in terms of when people are having troubles with rentals. He filed a suit on behalf of several plaintiffs, many of whom were residents of the area, and then a coalition of organizations, including People's Hurricane Relief Fund and the Grassroots Legal Network. They filed a suit that was granted a temporary restraining order on all bulldozing in the city until a hearing could be had, which was had on January 6th in Civil District Court. And Judge Martin Feldman on that day held what's called a status conference. It was not an open hearing. It was a private hearing. And he decided at that point, meeting with the lawyers in the city, that he needed more time to make a decision, and they were going to have a full hearing on January 19th. However, on Friday, on the 13th, there was a settlement. A settlement was reached in which the city basically conceded that they were on completely shaky legal ground, and a protocol has been set up to notify homeowners who could be facing demolition.
So what kind of relief does that amount to for the residents of the lower Ninth Ward?
It was a legal victory of sorts. A 1-800 toll-free number will be established. It may be up even today, which provides info only about the demolition that could be affecting homeowners. Anyone from around the country who's aware of the situation can call that to get information. Now, this is important because some people who are displaced, people just don't have their contact information. Now, in most cases, FEMA does have that information, and now the city is required to send U.S. mail to the last known address for people who have been displaced, notifying of the decision of the action to be taken on their homes. In addition to that, the city is required to run for 3 days in the Times-Picayune, the major newspaper in New Orleans, listings of red-tagged homes, their status, and if they will be bulldozed or potentially bulldozed. In addition to that, all this information has to be posted on the website. And depending on the classification of the home in terms of if it's an imminent threat, if there's a serious danger, if it's in the street, for example, there's either 7 days notification, 10 days, or even a month notification for homeowners before any action is taken.
We're going to take another break. I'm talking to Scott Beam. He's the author of Bulldozing the Dead in New Orleans. I'm Liz Brown. This is The Wake Up Call. We'll be back. Stay with us.
Update is brought to you this hour by
Seven Signs Masonry. Whatever your masonry needs, they do all brickwork. These are the best hands in the business. Seven Signs Masonry, 618-338-2871. That's 618-338-2871. Seven Signs Masonry.
This is your wake-up call global news update. Dateline Detroit. General Motors says it will be accelerating on its plan to cut costs. The car maker says it looks like it'll be able to slash about $4 billion in expenditures this year alone. It reported nearly a $4 billion loss in the first quarter of its current fiscal year because of dropping sales. Industry analysts say the company cannot survive unless it brings costs under control and finds a way to shed much of its loss of money. The automaker says one big way to help itself will be to start producing more of its vehicles outside of the United States. And Dateline Washington. Insiders say that Vice President Dick Cheney and some of his aides are working hard to make sure that former Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu winds up becoming the next Prime Minister of Israel. Elections are set for March 28th, and the Bush administration wants to make sure that acting Prime Minister Ehud Olmert and his new Kadima party get defeated. But the Jack Abramoff lobbyist scandal could put a crimp into getting Netanyahu into power.
Abramoff reportedly has possible connections to a defunct casino that started operating in Jericho in 1998. It was owned in part by a holding company that former Palestinian leader Yasser Arafat had a 20% share in. Another investor was an Austrian-based casino company that a close friend of Ariel Sharon's had a large investment in. Investigators are continuing to look at money transfers made to Sharon's son Gilead from Austria and South Africa. Sharon's other son, named Omri, also has financial interests in that same casino. Netanyahu served as Israel's finance minister during the time all of this was going on. Netanyahu was critical of the Oasis Casino, saying it was providing funding for Palestinian terrorist activities. But there could be evidence that Netanyahu influenced Abramoff to deflect some $140,000 away from a sham charity that he established in Washington as a cover for Indian tribal interests that were trying to gain casino gambling. That money may have gone to a group active among West Bank settlers to buy arms and other security equipment for them. Israeli prosecutors say no indictments, if any, will be issued until after the elections take place in March. This is your wake-up call global news update, brought to you this hour by
Seven Signs Masonry. Whatever your masonry needs, they do all brickwork. These are the best hands in the business. Seven Signs Masonry, 618-338-2871. That's 618-338-2871. Seven Signs Masonry.
Scientists and doctors are agreeing more and more that diet can determine whether a person lives a long, healthy life or a life full of unnecessary disease and even death.
I have diabetes, and after gradually changing my diet and getting more exercise, I've noticed my sugar level has become stable and my feet don't swell as much.
My blood pressure has been high for 3 years. Once I stopped eating salt and slowed down on eating oily foods, my blood pressure has gotten back to normal.
It seems like I gained weight just by looking at food. But now that I had the knowledge and most importantly the discipline to make conscious healthy choices, my whole life has changed.
Obesity, diabetes, and heart disease cause millions of deaths each year. Every 45 seconds, someone in America suffers from a stroke. Join the battle against these controllable and preventable diseases. Listen to Healthy Alternatives.
Create a healthy future today.
This is Dr. Laura Schlesinger with a personal invitation for you to join me from 2 to 4 every Monday through Friday afternoon on WGNU. It is so great to be back in the St. Louis area, and I'm looking forward to talking with you here at Radio Free St. Louis about your personal, work, and family problems and issues. Dial 1-800-DR-LAURA, that's 1-800-DR-LAURA, and let's take on the day. Join me, Dr. Laura Schlesinger, 2 to 4 Monday through Friday afternoons on Radio Free St. Louis, AM 920 WGNU.
Starting your day with information you can't get anywhere else. It's the award-winning wake-up call with Liz Brown.
Welcome back, welcome back, welcome back to the Wake Up Call. This is Liz Brown. I am talking to this morning Scott Beam. He is the writer of an article entitled Bulldozing the Dead in New Orleans. He's joining us from San Diego. Scott, you mentioned on the prior to the last break that there's been a settlement, and the settlement is a win of sorts. Does the settlement address in any way the disparity of the numbers of homes that have been tagged for demolition? Half of the homes red tagged in New Orleans are in the Lower Ninth, and a lot of them are going to be demolished or in the Ninth Ward, Lower Ninth. Does the lawsuit or the settlement address that in any way?
Well, what happened actually is that initial announcement for 2,500 homes to be demolished was a number that the city quickly backtracked from once the lawsuit was filed. And in fact, the city wanted to settle immediately after the suit was filed. The lawyers, however, wanted to pursue the case. And so they backtracked to about 190 at one point. And so
that's a long way for 2500. Yes, it is.
On the part of the city. I do not have the exact numbers with me at the moment, but the number now of affected homes is much closer to that 190 number than it is to the 2,500 number. So it is a case where people being organized around the issue, and unfortunately having to go through the courts, which is not always the most effective route, but it is an example of how organizing can affect the city's plans.
And going through the courts is always a challenging and cumbersome process, but it's even made more difficult by the court system as it exists in New Orleans. I mean, what is the court system like there now?
Well, actually, the Civil District Court just reopened, and they've just been closed for business in many of its official capacities, although they have been obviously up and running to the degree they've been able to. But yes, that's certainly true. All across the city, the infrastructure is still in shambles. And for someone who came outside of the city, I expected certain things, but I will tell you that it is amazing, if you have not been to New Orleans, to see how little has been done, which really, more than anything, is a demonstration of the lack of political will on the part of the federal government to address the situation as the tragedy that it is, and instead investing more and more money in the war in Iraq and not directing that to where the nation's citizens really need resources at this time.
Can you say, Scott, in terms of numbers or percentages or a guesstimation of the numbers of people that are making decisions about the land, homes being demolished, homes being rebuilt, are most of those people from New Orleans or from the outside of New Orleans?
In terms of demolition, the city is the voice speaking, but it's very difficult to know who's directing that voice. It's a bankrupt city at the moment. There's no money there. How much are city officials' hands tied to direct to decisions being made by people in FEMA, by the federal government? It's very, very difficult to know.
Who's making those decisions?
Yeah, it certainly seems that they must be taking direction from somebody higher up than just in the city.
You raised a number of questions in the article that you wrote, Bulldozing the Dead in New Orleans. You asked the question of why is the city rushing in to bulldoze the lower Ninth Ward? And one of the questions that you raise is about the unlawful tampering with the levees during Katrina. Is the rush to bulldoze an effort to do that? How much of a discussion is that still in New Orleans? Because a lot of folks have been told or laughed at or minimized for even raising the discussion of the tampering of the levees during Katrina. Is that a real discussion that is still going on in New Orleans?
In the city of New Orleans, this is a discussion I had maybe every day that I was in the city. I spoke to many survivors in different areas of the city as well. Now, I can't confirm anything. All I can say is that it's something that is not going away. I have talked to many, many people who said that they heard explosions. I talked to people in the lower Ninth Ward who said they were there. The water was receding. And then they heard this explosion. All of a sudden, water's flooding in. And this is when the real destruction happened. Now, could it have been the barge breaking through, perhaps? I don't have those answers, but there's certainly questions that have been left unanswered. People within the city certainly would like to raise them, but there has not been the apparatus to do that. There's been no full investigation to what really happened.
And we have about 30 seconds left here, Scott. Is there also a discussion, one of the questions you raised is whether or not these homes were being demolished to make rooms for a, as you put it, a glitzy Cajun casino land?
Right. It's going to either be casino land or perhaps even green space, which sounds innocuous, but it's not. If you consider the fact that this is a neighborhood where people have been living for many, many, many generations. This is not an area that can just be turned into golf courses or parks for the enjoyment of probably richer white residents who would be able to remain in the city. That sounds innocuous, but that would be a grave injustice.
Scott Beam, thank you so much for joining us here on the Wake Up Call this morning.
Thank you very much, Liz.
My pleasure. Listen, folks, if you want to read Scott Beam's article, you can go to lizbrown.com. Check out this week's activities on the Wake Up Call. And at the end of the day today, you'll be able to hear this interview archived live or archived at whiterosesociety.org. I'm Liz Brown. We will be back in the next hour. Stay with us.
I will never say that progress is being made. If you take a knife in my back 9 inches and pull it out 6 inches, there's no progress. You pull it all the way out, that's not progress. The progress is healing the wound that's below me.
I'm hearing revolution in the air, brother.
920 on your AM dial, WGNU, Granite City, St. Louis.
Latest from ABC News. I'm Daria Albinger. It's happened again.
For the third time in just over a week, a U.S. helicopter has crashed in Iraq. This morning, north of Baghdad, a chopper providing combat air control went down. Witnesses say it was shot down, but the military hasn't confirmed that. On Friday, two Army aviators were killed when their Kiowa reconnaissance helicopter crashed in northern Iraq. Military officials say hostile fire was likely the cause. 1 week ago, a Black Hawk went down near the northern town of Tal Afar. All 12 Americans on board were killed. The cause of that crash is still under investigation. Heather Nauert, ABC News, Baghdad.
We honor the birth of slain civil rights leader Martin Luther King Jr. today. President Bush is attending several events to mark it, starting with one at the National Archives in Washington.
An original copy of the Emancipation Proclamation is held in the Vault of Treasures at the U.S. Archives near the foot of Capitol Hill. President Bush drives over to view the document, which did not free all slaves immediately, but set the country on a new course at the height of the Civil War.
ABC's Ann Compton in Washington. First Lady Laura Bush is in Liberia. She looked on as Ellen Johnson Sirleaf was sworn in as the nation's new president. The Harvard-educated economist is also Africa's first elected female leader. Are you having trouble with the new Medicare prescription drug program? ABC's Aaron Katursky says you're not alone.
In the last 2 weeks, the administrator of Medicare says several hundred thousand Americans may have had trouble filling their prescriptions. The Bush administration has now told insurers they must take immediate steps to make sure poor people can get a 30-day supply of the drugs they need at a price they can afford. Critics of the new drug plan say it's too complicated, and one Republican governor told the New York Times its implementation by the federal government has been awful. Aaron Katursky, ABC News, New York.
This is ABC News.
Okay, so I was reading a magazine, and it said to look and feel my best, I should have a complete sit-down breakfast every day. Protein, calcium, vitamins. With little Dylan and Kaylee teaching the cat to swim, I'm lucky when I pull off a sit-down breakfast once a week. So I turned to Carnation Instant Breakfast with no sugar added.
With twice the calcium of yogurt and only 150 calories, Nestle Carnation Instant Breakfast with no sugar added is serious morning fuel.
And it leaves one hand free to rescue the cat.
Criminal justice is one of America's fastest-growing career fields. Now is a good time for you to develop your skills. At the ITT Tech School of Criminal Justice, they teach you the fundamentals of the criminal justice system. With a degree in criminal justice, you can pursue exciting entry-level opportunities. Classes meet just a few days a week, and financial aid is available for those who qualify. Call 1-800-851-4499 for an ITT Tech brochure. That's 1-800-851-4499.
Hello, I'm Johnny Cash.
The Johnny Cash biopic Walk the Line is a favorite for Best Musical or Comedy Film at tonight's Golden Globe Awards. It has several nominations. The film to beat, though, Brokeback Mountain, the love story of two gay cowboys, has 7 nods, including Best Actor and Best Picture Drama. Well, how real is the threat of killer bees? ABC's Joan Bennett says it's very, and several states are taking notice. The state of Arkansas is taking the risk of Africanized honeybees very seriously. This weekend, emergency workers from all over the state got some basic training in how to knock out a bee swarm. Unscented Dawn dishwashing detergent has been found to be the most effective weapon against the aggressive and persistent bees that have been known to pursue their victim up to a half mile. Tips for dealing with them? Run. Cover up your face. Scrape off stingers with a fingernail, not tweezers, so as not to release more venom. Joan Bennett, ABC News.
Daria Albinger, ABC News.
It's time for another WGNU News update. This WGNU News report is brought to you by Sonic, America's Drive-In. I'm Peyton Colston reporting. Today's the annual commemoration of Dr. Martin Luther King, Jr. Dr. Harvey Fields, the chairman of the Hilltop Committee of the King Commemoration Event at Washington University, says the late Rosa Parks will also be honored at this year's festivities.
Some have said that if there were no Rosa Parks, there might not have been a Martin Luther King Jr. Now, obviously, that's somewhat hyperbole because they both lived in the same time frame. But what's intrinsic in their statement is it was her decision to sit down that provided him the opportunity to stand up and take on the mantle of leadership that ultimately gave additional galvanization to the civil rights movement.
The university's theme this year is One Woman's Action, One Man's Effort. A celebration will be held in Graham Chapel on the campus of Washington University tonight at 7. Go online to wustl.edu for a list of other Martin Luther King Jr. events this week at Washington University. In other news, as St. Louis Archbishop Raymond Burke faces criticism over the excommunication of the lay board and priest at St. Stanislaus Parish, a new group is stepping up to take his side. Bill McKenzie, the coordinator of Defenders of Archbishop Burke, says St. Stanislaus Board is in the wrong for refusing to turn over control of the parish's finances to the archdiocese.
In the Catholic Church, power goes from the top down. It's a hierarchical organization. It's much like a family. It's just like in family, there's no way that the kids are going to take over for the parents. In the Catholic Church, the lay people are not going to take over for the hierarchy.
The Archbishop has named St. Agatha's Parish as the church for Polish-speaking parishioners in the St. Louis Archdiocese. And in Illinois, Congressman John Shimkus continues to spread the word to Illinois seniors about their options under the new Medicare prescription plan. Shimkus held a series of 3 seminars on the plan last week, and he says these sessions are vital to helping seniors understand the program and decide which plan to use.
Because not only do you now talk about the program and how to sign up and how to narrow down the list from 43 to a manageable amount to make a decision, a new program has always had some problems when it first gets out the gate, and I've been able to talk about those problems.
Medicare prescription benefits began on January 1st for those already signed up. Enrollment for the program ends on May 15th for people currently on Medicare. That's WGNU News for this hour, brought to you by Sonic. Not just good, it's Sonic good. Drive into Sonic this Tuesday night for half-price burgers. That's right, half price. Get a classic Sonic burger for half the price from 5 p.m. until close on Tuesdays. It's not just good, it's Sonic good. With WGNU News, I'm Peyton Colston reporting.
Good morning, St. Louis. 7 minutes after the hour of 8 o'clock at AM 920 WGNU. I'm Howard Morton with a look at this hour's traffic and weather. This hour's traffic is sponsored by the Illinois Lottery. Westbound 255 between Lee May Ferry and 55, all roadways reopened after an earlier sick case. Eastbound 44 from Antire to Merrimack River Bridge looks good. Eastbound 40 from Ballast to Big Bend is lighter than normal. Eastbound 70 from Bryan Road all the way to Blanchett Bridge looks good. Northbound 270 from Sappington to Doherty Ferry, everything is on the move there. Westbound 5570 to Poplar Street Bridge, no problems to report. Westbound 64 to 5570 merge, no problems there. Westbound Kingbridge traffic at Laclede's Landing looks good. Northbound Route 3 at Poplar Street Bridge, everything's on the move. Illinois Route 40 at Marine and Road in St. Jacob, there's a report of an injury accident. That is a look at this hour's traffic. This hour's traffic has been sponsored by
the Illinois Lottery. Play daily, play nightly, play when you need a smile, play for the rush. No matter how you play, play the Illinois Lottery, have a ball, have fun, play responsibly. Now, taking a look at your WGNU forecast for today, tomorrow, and for Wednesday. Partly sunny, a chance of showers this afternoon, high around 60 this evening. Rain likely till early morning, then rain and snow if possible. No snow accumulation is expected with a low in the mid-30s. Tuesday, much colder, mostly cloudy, a chance of rain and snow. High in the upper 30s Tuesday evening. Mostly cloudy, colder in the evening, then becoming partly cloudy overnight with a low in the mid-20s. Then on Wednesday, partly cloudy skies with a high in the mid-40s. Currently in the studios of AM 920 WGNU, we have 43 degrees. Lambert Field is reporting 45, both under very clear skies. Stay tuned for more of Liz Brown and the award-winning Wake Up Call is up next. We'll take another look at your traffic and weather in the bottom of the 8 o'clock hour. I'm Howard Morton for AM 920 WGNU.
I think I'm hearing revolution in the air. I think I'm hearing revolution in the air. Young brother, come and listen.
Welcome back, welcome back, welcome back to the Wake Up Call. This is Liz Brown, living my life as an African and loving it. 454-0400 is my phone number. 454-6609 is my fax. My toll-free long-distance number is 1-877-920-WGNU. That's 1-877-920-WGNU. You can also email me at revolution@lizbrown.com. Our shows, The Wake-Up Call, archived daily at whiterosesociety.org. Go to my website, lizbrown.com. You can get some additional information about our guests that we have on. And you can also check out my Liz Picks for the year 2005. Interviews with authors, interviews with interesting folks, the best of, if you will. from the year 2005. This is the day that folks around the nation are... this is just so odd for me to say. It's just... doesn't seem to be the right word. Celebrating the birth of Martin Luther King. And it's complicated. It's a complicated emotion and a complicated place that I find myself in emotionally every year. And every year as I see what is being done to this day, a man who was murdered, bullet was projected by racism, and the bullet killed him dead. And I see folks that, for all practical purposes, continue to carry out the legacy of the racism and the classism that Martin Luther King fought against, articulated against, organized against, and died because of. I see these fake folks using this day to say things about themselves that are not true. And I challenge everybody out there who's given a Martin Luther King speech today, if you're not going to talk about Katrina and the wicked, murderous classism that was revealed, if you're not going to talk about Katrina and the seemingly unending racism that it revealed, if you're not going to talk about this wicked, lawless war, if you're not going to talk about spying by our government, if you're not going to talk about those things, then you know what? You need to shut up and you need to sit down. Because this is a time, if not of celebration, but of activism and action and movement and illumination. And I'm using my show this morning to talk about kind of the three prongs of the issues that confronted Martin Luther King and that he addressed. In the last show, I talked about bulldozing the dead in New Orleans in honor of Martin Luther King. This hour, I'm going to talk about black women's lives, the story of Power and Pain, written by author Crystal Brent Zook. And she's joining us this morning. Crystal Brent Zook is author and adjunct professor of journalism at Columbia University in NYC. That would be New York City. Crystal, good morning.
Good morning.
How are you?
Fine, thank you.
Very good, and welcome to the show this morning. I'm looking at your book.
I can barely hear you, I'm sorry.
Okay, let me try it again. I am looking at your book, Black Women's Lives, Stories of Power and Pain. And I wanted to start, before we get to a discussion of what this book contains, I want to talk to you about, or I want you to talk to us about, why you wrote this book. You said in your preface that one of the reasons that you did this was I needed to understand the chasm between myself and those who remained in the rural fields that my grandmother left behind as a young girl. I needed to look back for myself, even if she did not care to. Talk to us about why you wanted to write this book.
Well, my grandmother was born in a very small place called Moscow, Arkansas, and she left when she was about 8, went to Chicago as part of the Great Migration, and never looked back, basically. Later ended up in California with her children, and has been there for a very long time. She returned to Arkansas with me last summer.
Because you made her.
Because I made her.
Yes.
And really had almost no desire to go except to see some family, distant relatives there. But I was interested in the fact that she never, ever mentioned Arkansas. If anyone asked where she was from, it was Chicago, which makes sense if she left when she was 8. But the majority of black people still live in the South, surprisingly. And my mother had never even been to the South. Because of my work, I'm a contributing writer with Essence Magazine, and I've written about a lot of issues from AIDS to environmental racism, and I've probably been South about 3 dozen times to various states, and I just found it interesting that even though I was raised on the West Coast and raised, I am biracial, I was raised with the black side of my family, my mother and grandmother, but being biracial, being college educated, being, you know, in Los Angeles, a major urban location, that my life was so different from what I saw as, you know, the majority still being in the South. So I wanted to explore some of that. And also, a lot of the issues that confront us today, a lot of these problems, like environmental racism, are still deeply, deeply rooted in the South. And as you said, when you talk about Katrina, you know, it didn't start with Katrina.
It did not.
We have Cancer Row, which is the name that black residents have given the entire section of the Mississippi River from Louisiana to Mississippi, because black people who live there are so filled with toxins from industries that have located there that it's just called Cancer Row.
And it's not, and speaking of Katrina, you also mention in your book as an epilogue that this isn't the first time that people of African descent have been run out of towns.
Right. I think that Bob Bullard he's probably the grandfather, godfather of environmental justice movement, and he's done some amazing work on looking at, look at all of the different highways that have been built straight through the middle of thriving, you know, black business centers throughout history. Look at freeways that came out of nowhere and, you know, different reconstruction efforts after disasters, natural disasters that just eliminated entire communities all across the country. He says that if you look at the history of transportation in this country, you really can see the history of the decimation of black communities.
Let's talk about your book, Black Women's Lives, Stories of Power and Pain. Tell us about the process of putting this book together, because each chapter is a different woman and a different issue and a different way to live in this, that they have lived in this world. Talk to us about that. How did you do that? How did you come to that?
Well, I did consciously want to tell the story of women from all walks of life, all different economic backgrounds, and from different locations throughout the country. So it was a process of, you know, stories I had written or thought about for Essence. Most of them haven't been published, but and stories that I wanted to write that never made it into the magazine for some reason and never made it into any media outlet. And there are reasons for that as well. But it goes from, for example, young black women in Los Angeles who were trying to pledge a sorority and who were killed it was the first known hazing death in the history of this country for black women. And I was struck by their story. For example, that chapter is called Sister, because these were two women who were so successful and came from such proud families. You know, one was president of the local NAACP chapter. She had awards. She was an athlete. She was a scholar. She was going to go to law school. The other was an artist, a photographer, very creative and successful women. And it just made me wonder what was it inside of them that went through this process. Even they had doubts while they were going through it, you know, being kept up all night and just having green paint put in their hair. And in the end, they were taken to a beach, and they were there. This is the reports that we have. Their hands and feet were tied. At midnight, they were asked to walk into the water, told to go into the water. The story gets kind of sketchy from there, but basically they drowned. You know, all in the name of this sisterhood. There was a lawsuit and there was a settlement, but like I said, that's a situation where the women are, you know, middle class, successful, educated. And I thought their story was interesting in terms of self-esteem, you know, and what were they looking for? What were they trying to prove? Why did they feel the need to be more than what they already were? And it goes all the way from stories like that to a labor leader in Mississippi. One of my favorite stories, it's called Worker.
And I really want to talk, I really, 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 that was one of my favorite stories as well. But I just kind of want to give the audience a sense of this, because you entitle each chapter, as opposed with the person's name, you entitle it with who they are.
Yes.
Why did you make that choice?
The choice of, it's really an archetype for each chapter. They're obviously, they're much more than, you know, some women are sisters and mothers and workers and farmers and artists, teacher. Those are the kinds of chapters. Citizen. We're all so much more than one thing, but I felt that each archetype symbolized the story that I wanted to tell about each woman. And it was a way of sort of connecting us to a universal concept. There's a chapter called Lover that's a little bit unexpected. Mm-hmm. People think they're going to read one thing. And
no, it's totally different than what you expect that you're going to see.
And you find out there are many kinds of lovers. So I saw it as a way to connect us, perhaps, you know, in unexpected ways.
What did you find out, or did you find out anything about yourself as a woman of African descent, about us in the compilation, in the research, in the writing about the artist, the lover, the activist, the teacher, the farmer? Did you find anything out about yourself that you didn't know?
I did. I think just in the struggle to get this book out, it was a long time coming. It was over 10 years, really, from when I first started thinking about it. And it was a long time coming because my first publisher wanted something very different and wanted me to talk about black women in terms of feminism, which I thought I could do. But I found that, you know, I've studied feminism. I've taught feminism. But like I said, this is part of the chasm that maybe separates me from some of the women I wrote about. They weren't interested for the most part. I don't want to say no black women are interested, but the women that I was interested in writing about weren't interested in the term. And so I found that I had to take myself to where they were if I really wanted to tell their stories in a way that was authentic and respectful. And, you know, I had to part ways with that publisher. It was a long battle. I had to find a new one, find somebody who just wanted to listen to the stories that were being told to me and not put some kind of structure on top of them and force them to be something else that they thought would be marketable.
So let's talk about, let's go to Mississippi and talk about, is it Indianola?
Indianola.
Indianola, Indianola, Mississippi. This is a chapter entitled Worker. I must say that I was really, really, as much as I think that I know and as much as I have experienced, I was really moved and shocked about the world that Sarah White lived in.
Mm-hmm. Most people are when they hear this story because Sarah White led the largest strike of black workers ever in the history of the state of Mississippi. And you've never heard her name. Most people have never seen the headline when this happened in 1990 in any newspaper. And it really makes you question why were boy- boycotts and strikes in the 60s any more meaningful, you know, that made national news and television, why were they any more meaningful than what Sarah White did in 1990? And the answer is they weren't. It's just that we're not covering them. We're not as interested in telling those stories anymore. And the story is so incredible, the fact that in 1990 or throughout the 80s, actually, these factories, you know, poultry plants and tobacco plants and catfish plants, completely denied workers just basic human rights. There were no holidays. There was no overtime.
Well, talk about the bathroom, because I think that to me was just the most amazing component of this, because some people get no vacation. Some people get that. But the bathroom piece is just amazing.
The bathroom is always the most shocking because, they, you know, the companies say this was in the name of efficiency, that workers were only allowed certain amounts of time to use the bathroom, and it was I think it was 5 minutes per week. So they would be outside of their normal breaks and their lunches. They would be timed for each break for a total of 5 minutes per week. And, you know, workers, of course, said this had nothing to do with productivity. This had to do with a kind of mental plantation mentality, a kind of, you know, keeping people in their place. Because it was so degrading, they were followed into the bathrooms by supervisors who held a timer in their hands.
And these are mostly women.
These are, at the plant where Sarah White was, this was mostly black women.
Mostly black women. And I know what women have to go through when they go to the restroom, all of the things that we have to deal with. The idea that somebody is following you into the bathroom. They even went so far as to take the doors off the bathroom.
They took the doors off the stalls because they said it encouraged dawdling. And, you know, you can imagine if you're pregnant, you have to use the bathroom more often.
Or if you're on your period.
Yeah. So it was so humiliating. And what I was shocked to hear, I heard it maybe once. First time I didn't believe it, but then I heard it a few more times, and workers said that they wear diapers, some of them. Because
wear diapers at work.
Mm-hmm.
And they would go on themselves like they were children, infants.
I mean, if they had to ask for permission, first of all, to use the bathroom, and if they weren't granted permission, then you're just on your own. So this was back then. But back then...
And wait a minute, what back then are we talking about? We're talking about...
We're talking about the 80s. So...
Let me hold that thought right there, Crystal, because we have to take a break. I'm talking to Crystal Brent Zook. She is author and adjunct professor of journalism at Columbia University in New York City. She's also a writer for Essence magazine. She has a new book out, Black Women's Lives, Story of Power and Pain. I'm Liz Brown. This is The Wake Up Call. We're taking a break. Stay with me.
There's a new world coming, and it's just around the bend. There's a new world coming. This one's coming to an end.
Good morning, St. Louis. 32 minutes after the hour of 8 o'clock at AM 920 WGNU. I'm Howard Morton with a look at this hour's traffic and weather. This hour's traffic is sponsored by TV Guide. Southbound 170 at Del Mar, and we do look for an accident. Right lane is blocked and traffic jam south of Olive. Eastbound 44 between 141 and 270. Look for everything to be on the move. Eastbound 40 between Spady and LaCleet Station. Traffic's lighter than normal. Eastbound 70 from K to Blanchett looks good. Northbound 270 at 44 is lighter than normal. Westbound 270 at Old Halls Ferry and 170 look for no problems to report there. Westbound 40 between Hampton and Hanley look for no problems there. Westbound 5570 at Poplar Street Bridge looks good. Westbound Kingbridge traffic, everything is on the move. And that is a look at this hour's traffic. This hour's traffic has been sponsored by TV Guide. See Golden Globe's biggest stars' arrivals with the Queens of the Red Carpet. Watch Joan and Melissa live tonight at 5 on TV Guide channel. Visit TVGuide.com for listings near you. Now taking a look at your WGNU forecast for today, tomorrow, and Wednesday. Partly sunny, chance of showers this afternoon, high around 60. This evening, rain likely early in the evening, and rain and snow possible after midnight. No snow accumulations are expected with a low around the mid-30s. Tuesday, much colder, much cloudy, and a chance of rain and snow high in the upper 30s. Tuesday evening, colder, mostly cloudy, with a low in the mid-20s. Then on Wednesday, partly cloudy with a high in the mid-40s. Currently at the studios of AM 920 WGNU, we have 43 degrees. Lambert Fields reporting 45, both under sunny skies. Stay tuned for more of Liz Brown and the award-winning Wake Up Call. Us up next, we'll take another look at your news, traffic, and weather in the top of the 9 o'clock hour. I'm Howard Morton for AM 920 WGNU.
Check out opening night at the Contemporary Art Museum at 3750 Washington Boulevard in St. Louis. It takes place on Friday, January 20th from 7 to 9 p.m. Bring your friends and join us to see the Great Rivers Biennial Show. Admission is free. For more info, call 314-535-4660. Something for you from Radio Free St. Louis.
Tired of talking to the wall, the TV, the puppy?
Here, Fido.
314-454-0400. 1-877-920-WGNU. Give us a call. We'll listen.
You want your preschooler to be ready for school. Trinity Tabernacle Child Development Center is ready to help you prepare your preschooler not only for school, but also for life. Trinity Tabernacle Child Development Center is an outreach of Trinity Tabernacle, Assembly of God in Bridgeton. Your child, age 2 to 4, receives a non-denominational Bible curriculum with Bible stories, songs, arts and crafts, plus lessons in numbers, science, arts, and phonics to help prepare him or her for kindergarten. Your child will also grow personally, socially, educationally, and spiritually every day as a unique individual created by God. Call Christine at 314-291-8839 to learn more about Trinity Tabernacle Child Development Center and to register your child. Open Monday through Friday from 6:30 a.m. to 6 p.m. Trinity Tabernacle Child Development Center, 11950 Mark Twain Drive in Bridgeton, 314-291-8839. Serving the community since 1979.
Informative, educational, provocative. This is the award-winning Morning Wake-Up Call with Liz Brown.
Welcome back, welcome back, welcome back to the Wake Up Call. I'm Liz Brown. My number here is 1-877-920-WGNU. This morning, I am talking to author and writer Crystal Brent Zook. She is the author of the book Black Women's Lives, Story of Power and Pain. She's an adjunct professor of journalism at Columbia University, and she's joining us here on the line this morning. Crystal, welcome back. We're talking about Sarah White. Talk to us about this town,
Indianola.
Indianola, Mississippi. Describe Indianola for me.
Indianola is one of those places in the South. I think it was the first place I went, the first time I went South, where you're driving and if you're from someplace out of the South, like me, I'm from Los Angeles originally, you're thinking about all the movies you've seen and all the stereotypes. Am I going to get pulled over in the middle of the night and disappear? for the work I was doing, it's scary in a certain way. It just feels like you're in the middle of nowhere, and it feels like anything goes. And in fact, when I first showed up at Local 1529 of the UFCW, the union where Sarah works, there was a group of women sitting around a table, and one of the first things they said to me was, "Does your mama know where you are?"
Mm.
And they meant that.
And they weren't joking.
In a certain way, yes.
Mm. And when we talk about the town itself, the plumbing, the poverty rate, how does Indianola How do you describe it?
Indianola isn't as bad as some of the more rural towns. I mean, it does have a few plants. It has, you know, catfish. It has a few places. It has steel plants. But there are many, many places in Mississippi, which is still the poorest state in the country, where, you know, they're just, it's like a third world country. There isn't, you know, local plumbing, sewage. The illiteracy rate is very high. So when you go there, you're just kind of surprised that we're still in the United States of America.
Describe the working conditions, what exactly they do inside this planet. And also, this is this amazing part of the story that you talk about of black men. I mean, you described before the break that this is a job that you find mostly black women in. Why are there no black men? Well, what do black men say about working in a place like this? Why aren't they there?
Well, I asked a few people that question, and we're talking not just about the catfish plants, but the poultry plants and tobacco. A lot of them are very similar in this, in that, you know, the majority of women, they have children, they have families, that, and they're the sole provider for their families. So they don't feel like they have a choice and have to accept the conditions in these plants. The men, from what I gather, felt like they had certain choices. They could join the underground economy, the drug trade, and they could make a lot more money with, frankly, a lot more self-respect as entrepreneurs, if you want to see it that way. And for a man not to feel degraded and belittled every day of work.
Again, we're talking about a company that people wore diapers to work because they were only allowed to go to the bathroom for 5 minutes total for a week.
Right. We're talking about one man I had a chance to interview had been repeatedly fired. This was part of the company policy so that, you know, once the union came in, if you fire someone, you can sort of set them back to zero in terms of wages and rehire them at a lower wage. So any time they've put in, any benefits kind of gets... So they fire them for really no reason. And he would have, he would be told, for example, he's working overtime that night at the last minute and have no say. He couldn't, you know, he couldn't say no. He would be put in a place where he's supposed to have help working, but the supervisor basically just watches him work alone. He had grievances that were supposed to be handled through the union with mediation by the company. And there were all kinds of ways that the company just sort of avoided dealing with, you know, legitimate grievances. So other black men saw joining the army as an option. And it's incredible to me that people would feel that going off to fight in a war is a better opportunity for their future than taking a job at home.
And looking at your life holistically, I guess the question is, isn't it?
Well, for them, it was.
I mean, and describe. There's one paragraph that you talk about the actual work, what they do, what the women do that work in this plant, and how a young man wasn't able to do it for 8 hours.
Right. This was in the poultry plants in Macomb, Mississippi, and I was told that, you know, it's an assembly line, or not an assembly, and it goes very fast. And the women who work a certain section had to pull parts of the chicken apart at the rate of 32 birds per minute.
Crystal, what can you do 32 times in a minute?
Not much.
I can't.
It's hard to imagine, but when you find out that a lot of the women had carpal tunnel syndrome, you understand why, this kind of repetitive activity. And before the union, it wasn't treated. You know, they would be given an aspirin and told to go back to work.
And the blood and the guck of it?
You had to walk in boots, of course, because the floors are filled with blood and guts and bleach water and the conditions you know, we're actually in violation of federal standards at certain points, and companies have been fined and have fought the fines. And so it really, when they say plantation mentality, it really, you have to understand that a lot of the owners of these industries come from slave-owning families.
Mm.
And the land of those plants is the same land that was owned by those families over generations.
Mm.
And so the owners are predominantly white, all white, and the workers are predominantly black women.
Why aren't there white women working in those plants?
There are some, but they're mostly supervisors.
And why aren't there non-supervisor white women working in it? Surely there are white people that live here.
There are, but I can only imagine that if it's the worst kind of work you could find, the most degrading work you could find, that they have other opportunities there. You know, they can work in sales. They can work in the post office. These are the jobs that black women take when there are no other opportunities for them.
And one of the things that I was struck by when I read about Sarah White was her conflicted spirit. She did this amazing thing. She challenged this amazingly awful racist institution, and she won. And yet, she seems so beat.
Yes, I think tired, so weary, I guess you could say. And that's what stood out for me too, just on a personal level. Her sense of not always being able to stand up for herself and not having self-esteem in her personal relationships. And she would say she overcame her shyness and became a public speaker and goes around and she represents the union. And she's, I mean, quite a powerful speaker. You listen to Martin Luther King and you listen to Sarah White and you hear the same kind of cadence and the same power in the way she speaks. She has that gift. But yet, she doesn't feel it in her personal life. She doesn't feel that she deserves, for example, you know, to make more money, to demand a raise, to demand what she's worth.
Do you think, Crystal, that Sarah feels that she's really done a lot? How does she evaluate the weight and the impact of what she's done?
Oh, I think she knows. She's made a difference in people's lives because they tell her all the time.
But, I mean, does she know it? The weight, has the weight of what she done really penetrated through her? Can you tell?
Well, and that's that tricky thing of self-esteem. You know, you can see it objectively from the outside without really feeling it on the inside. So I know she sees it because she's traveled been invited to speak in South Africa and went to South Africa and met Danny Glover and spoke to, you know, international audiences. So she certainly knows that she's an important figure, but when she goes home at night, you know, does she feel it on the inside? I'm not sure.
Because she makes the connection with her and Fannie Lou Hamer about how Fannie Lou Hamer was at the end of her life.
Mm-hmm.
And do you think she sees that in herself?
I think the last time I saw Sarah, she talked a lot about Fannie Lou Hamer's sadness and her sense that nothing was going to change. And especially after Katrina, I spoke with Sarah, and I think she feels a lot of the same sadness. You know, that strike was 15 years, 16 years ago, and there have been some gains for workers, but there have also been setbacks. And in her personal life, I think she thought she would be somewhere else at this point. So there is a lot of sadness in her story for me.
We're going to take a break, folks. I'm talking to author Crystal Brent Zook, author and adjunct professor of journalism at Columbia University. She's a writer for Essence magazine as well. And when we come back, Crystal, I would love to talk about the lover. My name is Liz Brown. Stay with me. We'll be back.
I don't know what to say to you.
La, 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 la. The Wake Up Call Global News Update is brought to you this hour by Metro Law Firm, 388-3400.
This is your Wake Up Call Global News Update. Dateline Lagos. The production of oil in Nigeria has been reduced by 10% following an explosion and the kidnapping of several foreign oil workers. In southern Nigeria, which is the rich delta region, several gunmen in boats strong-armed a vessel and kidnapped the four Royal Dutch Shell workers. Also in the same region, a large pipeline was attacked by militants. Such criminal behavior is common in the Niger Delta region because local peoples have complained they're not reaping a bigger share of the oil wealth they're helping to produce. Shell says it has evacuated all of its workers from the offshore platforms where the kidnappings took place. In a related note, the first audit of the company's oil and gas industry has found hundreds of millions of dollars in discrepancies between what oil companies said they paid in taxes and what the government of Nigeria says it got from them. Even though Nigeria is the biggest producer of oil in Africa, it still remains one of the poorest countries in the world. And Dateline Toronto. A feud is continuing between the United States and Canada regarding the imports of softwood lumber items. It goes back to 2002 when the U.S. slapped duties and fines amounting to 27% on lumber imports from Canada. Those imports make up a third of the American market. Since then, the tariffs have been reduced to about 11%. Canada appealed to the World Trade Organization after having a NAFTA panel agree that the penalties were unfair. That was back in last August. In December, the WTO also offered an opinion that the U.S. was wrong in its sanctions and gave Canada permission to slap higher tariffs on U.S. imports. A U.S. lumber official says Canada helped subsidize lumber exports by selling trees grown on public lands to local companies at below fair market prices, allowing cheap Canadian lumber to flood the American market and hurting U.S. producers in the process who won't sell their trees if the market price remains too low. This has caused a number of sawmill operations in the U.S. to have to shut down. Canada says the higher American tariffs have also caused mill shutdowns in Canada. One official says the North American Free Trade Agreement was something both companies signed, or both countries signed, rather, and both countries need to live up to. This is your Wake Up Call Global News Update, brought to you this hour by Metro Law Firm.
When you've been hurt in an accident, there are many things to consider. Doctor's bills, time lost from work, medical costs, ongoing injuries, pain and suffering. For over 25 years, attorney Albert Walton has helped people get paid for their pain, paid for lost time at work, paid for their property, paid for their suffering. Before you talk to anyone, call 314-388-3400. That's 388-3400 and talk to attorney Albert Walton for free. If you've been hurt, let Metro Law Firm's knowledge and experience help you get paid. Metro Law Firm, 314-388-3400.
This is Mitch Washington of the St. Louis office of Edward Jones, located at 200 North Broadway downtown, inviting you to tune in to Radio Free St. Louis for the WGNU Stock Market Recap. Weekday afternoons, immediately following the 3:30 traffic update. Find out how your investments are doing and how the numbers on Wall Street are affecting you. That's the WGNU Stock Market Recap with me, Mitch Washington, weekday afternoons at 3:30 on Radio Free St. Louis, AM 920 WGNU.
A voice for those that should be heard. This is the award-winning Wake-Up Call with Liz Brown.
I got something I want to talk about. Yeah. The time has come to air my feelings. Yeah, there's just so much confusion going down. I'm not the kind to be complaining. But sometimes you got to stand out from the crowd.
Welcome back, welcome back, welcome back to the Wake Up Call. This is Liz Brown. I am talking to author Crystal Brent Zook, author of A Black Woman's Life, Stories of Power and of Pain. Crystal, welcome back. Let's talk about the issue that was raised in the chapter entitled The Lover. Who is it that you're talking about? Talk to us about this woman.
Lover is really about two young women, Sakia Gunn and her best friend, Valencia Bailey. Sakia Gunn was the youngest African-American lesbian that we know of to be killed in a hate crime.
And I think that it's important to have this story as we see these young white boys that have been charged with bludgeoning to death a homeless person.
Yes.
These types of crimes happen.
Mm-hmm, yes. And in her case, what's interesting is that we really don't have figures that separate out race and sexuality and gender, for that matter. So we don't know, was it a hate crime? We know that it was because she was a lesbian, but how much of that is because she was a black lesbian, a black woman? There's hatred on multiple levels here, and there really aren't national figures, but we do know that hate crimes against young lesbians are increasing. I think it has to do with young people are coming out at an earlier age, and the people who are against their lifestyle are more and more adamant that, in fact, the hate crimes against them have become more brutal. There are less of them, but they're more brutal.
And there was something very, very, very strong and something very certain about Zakiya. She was clear and comfortable and proud in her life and who she was.
She was, and that's why I think her her story stood out for so many people. In Newark, New Jersey, where she was from, there was a huge candlelight vigil and a lot of local attention to her death because she was so popular and so well-loved, and you know, her group of friends knew who they were, and they had no problem with being out. And her and Valencia wanted to play professional basketball, and they had friends everywhere. They played on teams, you know. They were just happy high school girls. So her story really struck a nerve with a lot of Newark residents.
And also, one of the important points of this chapter is about the number of assaults triggered by sexual orientation and the rise of those numbers.
Right. Well, the rise at the time, Zakiya was killed on Mother's Day, actually, 2003. Early in the morning, her and her friends were coming back from a night out in the city in Manhattan. And the numbers at that time showed that hate crimes against young people had increased just a huge increase, something like 169%. And so we were trying to figure out exactly why that was. Victims under the age of 18 had increased. And like I said, I think it has something to do with young people coming out at an earlier age. The average age is now 16, but it continues to drop each year.
And I'm going to, I want people to find out where they can get your book, because I know that you have to go to a speaking engagement. So talk to us about where people can find Black Women's Lives.
Yes, it's actually available on Amazon.com or BarnesandNoble.com. Right now, I think you can pre-order it. It's just out, so it may be available within the next week or so.
And I love one of the last lines in your book, and the epilogue part of it is the comment that Alfre Woodard makes, and the comment that you quote her as, fighting for your life. That kind of sums up what these women done or did or and what we need to do.
Yes, and they're doing it to some of them are very successful. There's a chapter mm-hmm. called Executive mm-hmm. that focuses on a president of a company in New York. So it's not all about pain. It's about empowerment within pain and pain within empowerment as well.
Crystal Brent Zook, thank you so much for joining us on the Wake Up Call this morning.
Thank you.
Listen, folks, this is Liz Brown. Our number here is 454-0400 is the phone number. 454-6609 is my fax. My toll-free long-distance number is 1-877-920-WGNU. I will say that the chapter in this book, Black Women's Lives, Stories of Power and Pain, the chapter on Sarah Wright is the one that just absolutely floors me, to see and to feel that that people are living in this way, living at this time in this way is just, it's breathtaking. It's absolutely breathtaking. Black Women's Lives, if you want to read more about this book, you can check it out at my website, lizbrown.com. Our guest was Crystal Brent Zook. Go to lizbrown.com, find out more information about this book, and hear this interview at the end of the show today. It'll be archived at whiterosesociety.org. I will be back in the next hour to talk about a story that I'm certain that most of you have never heard of. The fact that the American Army executed 70 of its own soldiers in Europe between 1943 and 46, almost all of them were black in an army that was overwhelmingly white. One Frenchman witnessed the injustice, and he'll never forget. We're going to be talking about the interpreter when we get back. Stay with us.
All over the world. Martin Luther King was shot and was killed tonight. Remember that. I will never say that progress is being made. If you take a knife and knife back 9 inches and pull it out 6 inches, there's no progress. You pull it all the way out, that's not progress. The progress is healing the wound that the blow that the blow made.
I think I'm hearing revolution.
WGNU, Granite City, St. Louis, 920 on your AM dial.
Latest from ABC News, I'm Daria Albinger. If Martin Luther King Jr. was alive today, he would be 77 years old. This is the day that we honor the slain civil rights leader's birthday. President Bush marked the event with a visit to the National Archives to view a copy of the Emancipation Proclamation, the document that freed some of the slaves.
Abraham Lincoln recognized that all men are created equal. Martin Luther King lived on that admonition to call our country to a higher calling.
Many kids have the day off from school. Banks are closed and there is no mail delivery. There will be a new judge in Saddam Hussein's trial next time court convenes. Reuters is reporting that a replacement's been found for Risgar Amin, who recently said he wanted to quit. A meeting of some of the world's top diplomats is underway in London. The subject, what to do with Iran as it jumpstarts its nukes program. More from ABC's Linda Albin.
World powers are meeting here in London to try to devise a strategy for dealing with Iran. British Ambassador Jack Straw said Iran has only itself to blame for the current crisis triggered by Tehran's decision to resume nuclear research.
The onus is on Iran to act to give the international community confidence that its nuclear program has exclusively peaceful purposes.
Straw has said it's time to take the matter to the UN Security Council, but Iran has responded by saying sanctions could result in higher oil prices. Linda Albin, ABC News, London.
They're getting a break in Seattle. The sun came out yesterday after 27 straight days of rain. It's clear today, but guess what's in the forecast for later this week? People in parts of the Northeast are without heat or lights today after last night's strong snowstorm.
A lot of trees and power lines down, and it was blowing. You could see those awnings across the street all ripped apart. It was bad down here. The winds were picking up about 50 miles an hour.
He lives in the town of Westport, Connecticut. The family of Israeli Prime Minister Ariel Sharon says he briefly opened his eyelids today. Hospital officials say it's too early to call that a sign of recovery from Sharon's stroke. This is ABC News.
Okay, so I was reading a magazine, and it said to look and feel my best, I should have a complete sit-down breakfast every day. Protein, calcium, vitamins. With little Dylan and Kaylee teaching the cat to swim, I'm lucky when I pull off a sit-down breakfast once a week. So I turned to Carnation Instant Breakfast with no sugar added.
With twice the calcium of yogurt and only 150 calories, Nestle Carnation Instant Breakfast with no sugar added is serious morning fuel.
And it leaves one hand free to rescue the cat.
Criminal justice is one of America's fastest growing career fields. Now is a good time for you to develop your skills. At the ITT Tech School of Criminal Justice, they teach you the fundamentals of the criminal justice system. With a degree in criminal justice, you can pursue exciting entry-level opportunities. Classes meet just a few days a week, and financial aid is available for those who qualify. Call 1-800-851-4499 for an ITT Tech brochure. That's 1-800-851-4499.
They're usually held on Sundays, but this year the Golden Globes are tonight. The favorite going into the awards ceremony, Brokeback Mountain, a love story about two gay cowboys, but then again, you never know till it's over.
Brokeback, I think, simply by the number of awards it has garnered, is the favorite. Then you always have to say, oh, is it peaking too soon? Will there be backlash against it? In which case you might see something like Crash or History of Violence come up. Capote might make a run. I think you're going to see George Clooney's Good Night and Good Luck.
People Magazine movie critic Leah Rosen. It's back to school this week for students at Tulane University, and tonight, before their first day of classes, is something special. A concert by jazz trumpeter Wynton Marsalis. He says he's doing it because he believes the city's culture must be at the forefront of its preservation efforts.
It's kind of our signature, our calling card. So when we bring our culture back, we're saying to the world, hey, we're open for business and we're serious.
The students were evacuated from Tulane and other nearby colleges just before Hurricane Katrina. Daria Albinger, ABC News.
Time for a report of WGNU News. This update is brought to you by TV Guide Channel. In the news, the two sides of the now-defunct sale of the President Casino will face off in court tomorrow. President Casino officials filed a $60 million breach of contract suit last week against Columbia Sussex for pulling out of the $57 million purchase of the casino. The suit also seeks to force Columbia Sussex to return rates at the nearby parking lot to the longtime low rates. John Aylesworth, the president and CEO of the casino, says if the rates at the lot continue to increase, people won't come to the casino. He says the parking lot issue is a matter of the casino's survival. In Kirkwood, police are looking for a suspect in an armed robbery at a grocery store. The robber approached a clerk at the store in the 12,300 block of Old Big Bend Friday afternoon, displayed a handgun, and got away with an undetermined amount of cash. No one was injured in the incident. The suspect is described as a white male, about 6'2", with a chunky build and medium-length brown hair, last seen wearing a camouflage jacket and a hard plastic mask. He may be driving a blue two-door compact car like a Plymouth Laser or a Mitsubishi Eclipse. Anyone with information is asked to call Kirkwood Police. That number is 314-822-5858. The city of St. Louis will honor the legacy of Martin Luther King Jr. today. The 21st annual Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. commemorative breakfast takes place this morning at the Pavilion Hotel, with presentations of three awards, including a $1,500 scholarship to the winner of the annual Martin Luther King essay contest. A march from the old courthouse will end at Powell Symphony Hall, where an interfaith service will begin at 12:30 this afternoon. Meanwhile, the late Rosa Parks will be honored at the annual Martin Luther King Jr. celebration at Washington University. This year's theme is One Woman's Action, One Man's Effort. A celebration will be held in Graham Chapel on the campus of Washington University at 7 tonight. Go to www.wustl.edu for a list of other Martin Luther King Jr. events this week at Washington University. And that's a report of WGNU News, brought to you by TV Guide Channel. See Golden Globe's biggest star arrivals with the Queens of the Red Carpet. Watch Joan and Melissa live tonight at 5 on TV Guide Channel. Visit TVGuide.com for listings. I'm Peyton Colston, reporting for WGNU News.
Good morning, St. Louis. 7 minutes after the hour, 9 o'clock at AM 920 WGNU. I'm Howard Morton, with this hour's traffic and weather. This hour's traffic is sponsored by the Illinois Lottery. Eastbound 44 from Chrysler all the way to Berry looks good. Eastbound 70 from Bryan to Blanchett looks good. Northbound 270 at 44, everything's flowing freely. Westbound 270 at Riverview and West Forest, and no problems to report there. In both directions, 40 at Hanley, everything is on the move. Westbound 5570 to Poplar Street Bridge, traffic is flowing freely. Westbound Kingbridge traffic at Cleves Landing looks good. And that is pretty much a look at this hour's traffic. This hour's traffic has been sponsored by the Illinois Lottery. Play daily, play nightly, play when you need a smile, play for the rush. No matter how you play, play the Illinois Lottery. Have a ball, have fun, play responsibly. Now taking a look at your WGNU forecast for today, tomorrow, and Wednesday. For today, partly sunny, a chance for showers this afternoon, a high around 60 this evening. Rain likely till early morning, then rain, snow possible. No snow accumulation is expected. The low should be in the mid-30s. Moving on to Tuesday, much colder, mostly cloudy, chance of rain and snow, high in the upper 30s. Tuesday evening, colder, mostly cloudy in the evening, becoming partly cloudy overnight with a low in the mid-20s. And then on Wednesday, partly cloudy skies with a high in the mid-40s. Currently at the studios of AM 920 WGNU, we have 45 degrees. Lambert Field is reporting 46, both under sunny skies. Stay tuned for more of Liz Brown and the award-winning wake-up call. That's up next. We'll take another look at your news and your weather in the 10 o'clock hour. I'm Howard Morton for AM 920 WGNU.
I think I'm hearing revolution in the air. I think I'm hearing revolution in the air. Tell me, brothers, how can you sister? I think I'm hearing revolution in the air. Tell me, brothers, how can you sister?
It is time for us to use our power. Please do not beg for power. Nobody is going to give it to you. You were born with power.
Some very sad news for all of you, the people who love peace all over the world. Martin Luther King was shot and was killed tonight in Memphis. I will never say that progress is being made. If you stick a knife in my back 9 inches and pull it out 6 inches, there's no progress. You pull it all the way out, that's not progress. The progress is healing the wound that the blow made.
I think I'm hearing revolution in the air.
Splendor and glory. There are more poor than ever. More families in trouble. More and more people who need help but can't find it. A struggle against the common enemies of man. Tyranny, poverty, disease, and war itself.
We believe that all men are created equal. Yet many are denied.
And so we say to all in this nation who dare listen to us, black, white, Jew, Gentile, Asian, Latino, that we are brothers and sisters in a long and difficult struggle.
This is Mondays at 9 with Liz Brown, where we take a closer look at issues and people shaping our world and how they affect us. Once again, here's Liz Brown.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to January 16th, 2006 edition of Mondays at 9. Because it is Martin Luther King's, the day that we have off celebrate, to move on, to participate in the birth date of Dr. Martin Luther King. I think it's important. I am not into the touchy-feely component of this. I'm into the, it's time to remind the world and to maintain for the world the real story and the real history of our country's legacy and our country's racist legacy. Until we understand that, until we accept that, until we knew that, there can be no movement, no real consistent movement forward. And it's important to know that, warts and all, as ugly as it is and as difficult as it is for some, You can't move forward in any real way unless we know in every real way where we have been cannot be done. So we're going to talk this morning on this edition of Mondays at 9 about a book that was written by Alice Kaplan. Alice Kaplan is joining us from Durham, North Carolina, and she is the author of The Interpreter. Alice Kaplan, good morning.
Good morning, Liz Brown. I'm delighted to be here with you.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you here. This is an amazing, amazing story. I'd like to think that I know a whole lot about the things that have happened in the name of this country, but this one I did not know about. How did you come to give us a little bit of background of who the interpreter is, and then tell us how you came to write this story?
Yes, well, the interpreter is a Frenchman. His name is Louis Guillou. He was a very well-respected and beloved writer in France. He had written a book considered a masterpiece about World War I. And the American Army just found him in his hometown at the Liberation. He was one of the few people around who could speak enough English to help them. He had a really good ear for language. So he worked for them for 2 months, and he served as an interpreter in courts martial. And he was really shocked. Here the Americans were liberating his country. He was deeply grateful. And then he saw that their own army was organized around racist lines, that it was a segregated army. He was so upset by this, it took him 20 years to start writing about it. He started writing in 1964 at the height of the civil rights movement in this country, which I believe was educating him. And he started seeing his experience through that perspective.
He also talked about the obviousness of it, mm-hmm. the obvious of the justice for some and injustice for others.
Yes, he said, even the stupidest of men would have ended up asking himself how there could be so much crime on one side and so much virtue on the other. 79% of all death sentences were meted out by that army to African-American men in an army that was only 8.5% black.
Tell us how you got involved in this. How did you find out about this?
Well, I read a little novel he wrote that hadn't been translated at the time. It's called OK Joe. It took him a long time to write it. He published it 2 years before he died in 1976. And it showed scenes of the segregated army and his attempt to understand, to ask the officers he was working with what was going on. Was this a special tribunal for black men? I mean, only an outsider could have that kind of lucidity. I decided this was a very important testimony, this book, and I translated it and came out with University of Chicago Press. It's available. But as I was translating it, I thought, I wonder how close this is to the real facts. And, you know, Louis Guillou just lit a fire under me, and I wasn't going to be satisfied until I found the real cases. So I had some luck in the archives, and I found, I got transcripts of all the trials in which Guillou served as interpreter. And I wrote my book about two of those trials.
Because he kind of focuses in his novel, OK Joe, he focuses on he kind of tells the story through one soldier.
He tells the story, the narrator of his novel is himself, the interpreter, and he tells the story basically of two trials, the black enlisted man, James Hendricks, who was condemned to death and executed, and the white officer who was acquitted of a murder. Of course, he doesn't use any names.
Why did he choose fiction? Why did he tell it that way?
That is the number one question, I think. Why did a guy like that choose fiction? I think we forget how powerful a political tool fiction was in Louis Guillou, for a man of Louis Guillou's generation. He was tied to all those great French political writers, Malraux and Sartre and Camus and Gide. They were all his friends. And they used fiction to send a message. I don't think he would have thought of writing nonfiction. Of course, he had no archives. He only used his memory, but he had a wonderful memory for scenes and voices. And so many of the scenes that he shows in that novel turned out to be absolutely accurate when I went to the trial transcript.
And how long did he serve as an interpreter?
Only 2 months. And in that time, he served on 4 or 5 cases. But the two that struck him were the case of this black enlisted man who was executed, and then right away, next case he had was the White Ranger officer.
And all of this is against the backdrop of the liberation of France. It's against the backdrop of what Patton wanted to do to show that the occupiers were nothing like them. So we have all of that going on in the background as well.
I know. One of the things I really wanted people to be able to do in reading is change perspective. We always hear the story about D-Day. We always hear it from the point of view of, you know, the Private Ryans. The American GIs who went in heroically, climbed up those cliffs and liberated. We don't think about what it was like for French civilians. They were being bombed. The stench of dead cattle was there for months afterwards. Entire cities flattened for their liberation. They were grateful, but they were traumatized. And we don't think about African-American soldiers who were kept out of combat units, who were in service units. Those service units were vital to the success of the army. They were the ones who moved the supplies across Europe.
I was struck by the one line in your book that kind of underscores what you're saying when you analyze the lives of the French people that lived through this, was the fact that they didn't feel the execution of Hendrix, the quote that she said was, "You have to understand we had so many deaths, an episode like that one was quickly swallowed up in the dramas of the moment."
Mm-hmm. It was just another death for them. But for the Americans who saw those hangings, one man that I talked to here in North Carolina, for him, you know, a white man, he said it was a legal lynch. It brought back terrible memories for him. Of North Carolina history.
Let's talk about that. Let's talk about the soldier that was involved. Start at the beginning for us of Hendrix.
The case of James Hendrix.
Yes.
James Hendrix was a young man, 21 years old, from a rural town in North Carolina. He was drafted into the Jim Crow Army. He trained at Camp Van Doren, considered one of the very worst training camps. There were riots there in 1943 because a sheriff from the town killed a soldier on the base. He went over to Europe. He was in a quartermaster truck company driving supplies. He went out one night drunk and pounded on the door of a farmhouse. They wouldn't open for him. He shot through the door, not knowing if, you know, and there was anyone on the other side. There was. He killed Victor Bignon, a French peasant. He was crazed. He opened the door. He chased the mother and her daughter across the road.
Is it clear why he was chasing them?
You know, it's really hard to put yourself in his frame of mind. I think he was drinking the French cognac that the soldiers would get, so strong, the army said, you could use it as a cigarette lighter. These men, there was a lot of alcohol abuse in the army. I just imagine him panicked and crazed.
So he chased them across the road, and what happened then?
Naomi Bignon, who was Victor Bignon's widow, fought off his attempts to assault her. He attempted rape. He didn't finish the rape. He was then arrested by his own commanding officer, who was one of the rare African-American commanding officers in the Army. And he's a very poignant figure in the book,
mm-hmm.
because he was in the terrible situation of having to testify both for Hendrix's defense and his prosecution. Hendrix's trial was flawed all the way through. He had a defense lawyer with very little legal training. He did not speak in his trial. He chose to remain silent. We don't know why, whether he was encouraged to remain silent. But when you contrast that with a white ranger officer who spoke so eloquently and who had such an ingenious defense, his defense happened to be Hendricks' prosecution, you can see why Louis Guillaume thought there was something really wrong going on.
And there was also, although Hendricks did not speak, there was a statement attributed to him.
A brief statement that he gave to the military police, you know, at 2 or 3 in the morning. Saying that he didn't remember what happened, he'd been drunk, he'd passed out, and so on.
And then there was a written statement afterwards, almost like a two-sentence statement?
I looked and looked for Hendricks's voice in all these papers. I mean,
because that was the amazing part about, while you feel that Hendricks was, because so many people are speaking on behalf of him, he's silent through this whole discussion, this whole story.
And, you know, for Louis Guillaume, who knew African-American literature very well, who translated Claude McKay's Home to Harlem, for him, I'm sure what he thought about when he was writing that novel was Richard Wright's Bigger Thomas and Native Son, who will not speak in his trial. And that silence, almost, in the case of Wright, it was almost a form of resistance. Mm-hmm. But for Guillou, I think that Hendricks' silence was very tragic. And for us, too, I mean, he says one line as he's about to be hanged that is just heartbreaking.
And share that with us.
He said, it was the chaplain who asked him if he had a last word. Do you have a statement to make to me as chaplain? He says, thank you for what you did for me. Tell all the boys not to do what I did. The only time in all these masses of papers where I could hear James Hendricks speak.
And what is it that he did that he was executed for?
Well, you know, anyone who does death penalty activism is an enemy of something in the law called felony murder. And felony murder means that if you commit two felonies, it's a capital case. The problem with felony murder is it doesn't take intent into account. Now, Louis Guillaume, who knew nothing about the law, military justice, and so on, what he saw was a black man executed for a crime he didn't intend to commit. And then he saw a white officer acquitted for a crime that he clearly intended to commit. George Whittington shot and killed a French resistance fighter outside a bar. These are really complicated issues. You know, James Hendricks is not an innocent victim. So in working on his case and in deconstructing, really, his case, I wasn't arguing that he should be exonerated. I was arguing the violence of a system that chooses to punish some people more than others.
And based upon the color of their skin.
Based upon the color of their skin, based upon their privilege.
And where was France at this time during the, after the liberation of France, the end of World War II? Where was France in its terms, in terms of its position on the death penalty? I know where it is today.
That's right. France abolished the death penalty in 1981. There would not have been a death penalty for a rape in France, for example. That did not exist. There were French people being executed at that time. In fact, one of the ways I got to this story, I had just written a book on a French fascist, a collaborator who was executed for treason in January 1945. But Guillaume was shocked by these death sentences in the American court-martial.
You mentioned there was no execution in France, or you couldn't be executed in France for committing a rape. In North Carolina, where James was from, that certainly wasn't the case at that time.
No, I mean, if you look at the death sentences in North Carolina for, I don't know, a 20 or 30-year period, before the James Hendricks case, virtually everybody executed is African American or Native American, and certainly a lot of rape.
So the stats, really, the stats of the United States Army and its prosecution of people of African descent in Europe or in the military courts really track what the United States was doing in a civilian court at that same time?
It's a mirror. Yeah, it's a mirror. And, I mean, there's so much else that's mirrored. The fact that these African-American soldiers were sent to do menial labor in the war, the kind of menial jobs they were forced into at home, the kind of training they had. You know, they taught the Army, you read the documents, and you see the phrase, separate but equal, all over the place. They even say there have to be black witnesses to the executions along with white witnesses because of separate but equal. It was separate but unequal in every aspect, even in crime.
When you went and had an opportunity to, or you had an opportunity to talk to the members of James's family, how did they understand James's death in the military? Did they know he was hung?
They did not, and that was certainly for me the most intense and most difficult part of my own journey when I learned, you know, almost by luck through the U.S. Census, that James Hendricks, this character in Louis Guyot's novel, lived 40 minutes, grew up 40 minutes from my own house in Durham, North Carolina. You can imagine the chill that went through.
Absolutely.
I went to some funeral parlor people in his town to find out who in the family would be the appropriate person to talk to.
And interestingly enough, these were black funeral homes.
Oh, yes. A colleague of mine here at Duke, Maurice Wallace, who's really a marvelous critic of African-American culture, he said, you talk to funeral parlor people. They are the ones in southern towns who know the histories of the families. They know the black community better than the preachers do because they've been around a long time. They know the families. So I did that, and I found a woman named Evelyn Eccles whose father had been the adopted brother of James Hendricks. They grew up together on the farm in Macon, North Carolina. I really worried about whether to tell the family that James had been executed by hanging.
Because you knew at that time that they didn't know.
They didn't know. There were rumors around the town after the war that he had been shot by a firing squad. He was a joker, and he liked to tease people and talk. And they thought he had sassed off to a white officer. They had gotten a telegram after the war saying he had died of his own willful misconduct.
And willful misspelled and
willful misspelled. You know, who's going to know what in the world that means? And I learned that all the families got that telegram. Mamie Till, Emmett Till's mother, got the same telegram about her husband, Louis Till, who was executed in Italy. Mm. She says in her memoirs she had no idea what that meant. But I decided that there would be no trust, that this family would not trust me if I kept something so big from them.
So hold on to that thought, please. We have to take a break. This is Liz Brown, Mondays at 9. I'm talking to the author of The Interpreter, Alice Kaplan. She's joining us from Durham, North Carolina. We're taking a break. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
After all this time, nothing's changed. Maybe wanna holler, make me wonder.
This is Dr. Laura Schlesinger. Join me every Monday through Friday from 2 to 4 on Radio Free St. Louis, AM 920 WGNU, and get a new attitude.
Hi, it's Kevin.
And Stu McCarthy.
Of the Travel Planner Show.
Before you head out for a trip, you want to know how to pack, so check weather at yahoo.com, and then you'll know what to wear when you get there.
Oh, she's so good. The Travel Planner Show, every Saturday afternoon from 2 to 4 here on AM 920 WGNU.
Hi, my name is Cheryl.
Hi, my name's Dove.
And we are the hosts of the new Crime Time Live talk show on WGNU.
Do you have a question that you've been dying to ask a private investigator?
We will take your questions and discuss topics that you won't want to miss every Monday night at 10.
Need to get a background check?
How do you protect yourself when looking for Mr. and Mrs. Wright?
Can't find someone that owes you money?
Find out how on Crime Time Live, Monday nights at 10.
Spectacular skating, laughter, and unforgettable moments. Hi, it's Scott Hamilton, the producer of Smucker's Stars on Ice. This year's show celebrates our 20th anniversary, and we are so excited. It's a show about the show. You'll get a behind-the-scenes look from the past 20 years and see how it all happens, from auditions and rehearsals to opening night and everything in between. From our most shining accomplishments to some of the less-than-perfect moments, see skating's best Olympic and world champions in this one-night-only performance of Smucker's Stars on Ice.
With special guest Kurt Browning coming to Savas Center Friday, February 3rd, 7:30 p.m. Your tickets are on sale now at the box office, all Ticketmaster outlets, and at Ticketmaster.com. Kids and senior discounts available. Smucker's Stars on Ice, an IMG production.
It's going to be a great celebration, the 20th anniversary tour of Smucker's Stars on Ice.
The struggle for fairness on the award-winning Wake Up Call with Liz Brown.
Mondays at 9 with Liz Brown, where we take a closer look at issues and people shaping our world. Once again, here's Liz Brown.
Welcome back. I'm talking to the author of The Interpreter, Alice Kaplan. She's joining us from Durham, North Carolina. And Alice, we're talking about letting the conversation that you had with the relatives of James, and letting them know how he died. So you so you decided that you were going to tell them.
Yes, I did, and I gave them all the paperwork that I had gotten from the Army.
Well, how did you come in contact with them? I mean, did they contact you back? How did they agree to meet with you?
I sent a letter to Evelyn Eccles telling her what I was working on, and later she told me there was one word in my letter that let her know I was okay. I used the phrase Jim Crow Army.
Right.
And she wanted to help. She was extremely sensitive and open. She wanted to know what happened. The family wanted to know. She used the word closure.
Mm-hmm.
It's not good to know what happens to people, even if the knowledge is painful. She did say that if I had been dealing with her parents' generation, it might have been very different. And I believe that's true. I think it might have been. They might not have wanted to have anything to do with me. It might have been shameful for them. We've now got 60 years removed. That family, of course, really wanted to know where James Hendricks was buried.
They didn't know where he was buried.
And that, I think, is tragic, very tragic. I found James Hendricks in the same cemetery plot with Emmett Till's father. It's in France, and outside the confines of an official World War I U.S. cemetery. It's a plot that's been closed to the public called Plot E, and there are...
How do you close that to the public? How is that done?
Well, it's just hidden. I mean, if you go to visit that cemetery, you won't see it. You would have to go behind the caretaker's house, and there, set among some hedges, is this plot, this small grave plot, where each grave is a marble square set into the grass with simply a number on it.
No name.
No names. Find it very sad. And so, I'd like to see the Army do something about that. I'd like to see the Army get in touch with each family so that the families know where their family members are buried.
Alice, what is did you ever find out what was the reason why the United States military didn't ship the bodies back? Why did they bury them there?
I think they wanted to segregate these men from the men who had, they called them the dishonorable dead. And, you know, the dishonor, we have to ask whose dishonor is at question here. They wanted to segregate them for the men who are buried at Omaha Beach.
But I'm just talking about
no idea.
Just shipping them home. Let the families bury them. Why didn't they just ship them home?
You know, I don't know. I suspect the communication with the families was very poor. You have to wonder, the Army seemed to make a big effort to publicize the hangings among the French civilians to show that they meant business, they weren't going to tolerate any bad behavior, and yet these cryptic telegrams talking about willful misconduct. I found no letters in any of the files I looked at explaining place of burial, asking if the families wanted to bring them home. I found no trace of that.
But even the communication to the French community, it was also calculated in terms of the papers that were allowed to report and what the papers were allowed to report about.
No photographs were allowed. Mm-hmm. No names were to be given. Yeah.
And no units to be identified.
That's right.
So how open was the military with the French?
I'd say this was not an... I mean, you remember, wartime justice couldn't be more flawed.
Well, I want to talk, if we may, about rape, about how the issue of rape factored into the decision to hang James. What evidence did we have introduced during the trial that there was indeed a rape?
There was no rape. There was an attempted rape, according to the testimony of the Bignon widow. And
but yet and still, this was one of the reasons why James was hung.
That's right. Attempted rape was considered a felony in this military law.
And I think one of the interesting things in that you talk about in your book, The Interpreter, is how the French women were treated in the Army's so-called effort to get at righting a wrong, and because the Army believed that there was a crime of rape that needed to be punished. How were the women, the French women, treated in the Army's investigation of this?
Well, when I read the trial transcript and I saw the questions that poor Madame Bignon had to answer, the violence of the prosecutor. I mean, he said things to her like, I'm sorry, I have to try to get into her head, the things that are in my head. He needed her to say there had been penetration. Well, there had been no penetration. He was very violent with her. She was the outsider in that courtroom. She was as far away from home in that American courtroom, certainly, as James Hendricks. There was an odd kind of parallel between them as the outsiders and the suspected ones.
Did the French community, did the French town, did they have a sense of justice? Did they feel a sense of justice after the hanging?
Yeah. I talked to some men who are now in their 70s. Who witnessed these hangings as boys and never forgot them. I mean, in one little town in the far west of Brittany, the field where the soldier was hanged is still called in the Breton language Black Man's Field.
Mm.
So clearly there's a memory. It's remained with them. They don't seem, you did quote a minute ago that man saying there had been so much violence, there had been so many deaths. They don't seem to have been as traumatized by the hangings as the American soldiers who witnessed them. But you can imagine what an act of violence was like for them at the time when the whole town was celebrating. If one of their family members was killed, this was very traumatic. It was out of time. Wasn't supposed to be happening to them anymore.
Talk to us about, it's almost the theater of the day that James was hung. What did the military do?
What I learned was that men were sent to a town. They had no idea why they were being sent. They were ordered there. Some of them were called authorized spectators. Others were called official witnesses. They gathered together, in the case of Hendricks, in this courtyard of an old abandoned chateau. And then they were told why they were there. They were there to witness a hanging.
How did the place where James was hung, how did it get there? Did the military build it?
No, one of the things that's so disturbing when you read about the liberation is that the Americans took over the very same public buildings that the Germans had been occupying really only days before.
Kind of like Abu Ghraib.
Yes. Yeah, there's a very fine line anyway between occupation and liberation.
Mm-hmm.
And you try to imagine it from the perspective of the French people. One day there are Nazis in these buildings, and the next day there are Americans.
Mm-hmm.
And they're trying to see the difference. They're mm-hmm. wanting to see the difference. The chateau had been abandoned for years, and somebody in the army chose it as a site for the hanging. In other places, it was, as I said, in this town in the west of Brittany, it was just an open field. And the hanging was announced by a town crier on Sunday after Mass. Things were so old-fashioned in Brittany in 1944, they still had town criers. Can you imagine?
Mm. And my understanding, I guess, what you come to learn about France is the guillotine. Why wasn't he executed via the guillotine?
Mm. Well, this was a completely American operation. I think the Americans wouldn't have known what to do with a guillotine. But you're right. You're right to remind us that that was the method of capital punishment in France for civilian cases. In the military, they would often use a firing squad.
So our government built a place to hang him from?
They would build the scaffold. They would come with their hammers and their pieces of wood, their slats, and they would build a stairs. And the platform, and if you go to the archives, you can see the diagrams how to build a scaffold
to hang.
Mm-hmm. And you know, somebody asked me the other day, what qualified you for hanging, and what qualified you for a firing squad? And that's a very good question. It's not one I can answer completely, but I think that the hanging is certainly the lowest form of capital.
Well, I believe that if you look at the history of our country and how people of African descent have been killed in this country, hanging is the thing, the way to go.
And, you know, one man I talked to who called these hangings a legal lynch, what shocked him was the black cloth over the man's head. That was very, very upsetting to him.
We're going to take another break. I'm talking to Alice Kaplan. She's the author of The Interpreter. She's joining us from Durham, North Carolina. The American Army executed 70 of its own soldiers in Europe between 1943 and 1946. Almost all of them were black. In an army that was overwhelmingly white, one Frenchman witnessed the injustice and never forgot. The Interpreter by Alice Kaplan. We'll be back to talk to her more after this.
Oh, no. Yes, just as many as you. It isn't your sweet conversation that brings.
This is your wake-up call, Global News Update. Dateline Washington. An intelligence analyst says a newly released video message from a high-ranking member of Al-Qaeda could be a signal for a large-scale terrorist strike within the next 30 days. The Al Jazeera satellite network aired an interview with Ayman al-Zawahiri, said to be the number two leader, on January 6th. Analyst Christopher Brown says over the past few years, Zawahiri's messages come in pairs, and whenever the second one receives airplay, a large-scale attack usually takes place within 30 days outside of the main areas of combat in Iraq and Afghanistan. His first pair came out in September 9th and November 9th of 2004. Then the bombings in Jeddah, Saudi Arabia took place on December 6th of that year. The second set came out on February 20th and June 26th of last year.
and then the London bombings happened on July 7th. The third set aired August 4th and September 1st of last year, which was followed up by the bombings in Bali, Indonesia on October 1st. Brown says this latest pair came out on October 23rd of last year and January 6th of this year. Brown says the green light for each al-Qaeda action comes with a posting by a group called the Abu Hafs al-Masiri Brigades around the time the second Zawahiri video airs. Last October, a London newspaper reported that an al-Qaeda operative had told French investigators that there is a group inside France that has in its possession surface-to-air missiles and biological weapons that were purchased in Turkey and smuggled into France through Georgia and Turkey. Brown says he has made his analysis available to several U.S. agencies, including the CIA, but none have had any comments about it. This is your Wake-Up Call Global News Update.
Do you know your credit score? You should, because staying on top of your credit could help save you thousands of dollars. You can now get your credit score and credit report at freecreditreport.com.
I go online and in seconds I get my credit report and credit score free.
I can even print it right off my computer.
Staying on top of my credit helped me save a lot of money.
Get your free credit report and score when you sign up for a 30-day credit monitoring trial at freecreditreport.com. That's freecreditreport.com.
Walmart and Sam's Club have teamed up with Humana to provide you with all the information you need about the new Medicare prescription drug benefit. Enroll today. Log on to walmart.com/Medicare or talk with your Walmart pharmacist or Humana sales representative. Walmart and Sam's Club pharmacies accept all Medicare prescription drug benefit plans. Medicare-approved HMO, PPO, and PFFS plans available to anyone enrolled in Part B and entitled to Part A of Medicare through age or disability. Copayment, service area, and benefit limitations may apply.
This is Jim Curran, Curran Events. We're on every Monday nights now from 8 to 10 p.m. On Curran Events, we let both sides of an issue be heard. That way we can learn from each other. That's Monday nights, 8 to 10 p.m., Jim Curran, Curran Events, right here on WGNU.
Information you need to know about but can't find anywhere else on the dial. The award-winning Wake-Up Call with Liz Brown. Mondays at 9 with Liz Brown, where we take a closer look at issues and people shaping our world. Once again, here's Liz Brown.
Welcome back to Mondays at 9. Our guest this morning is Alice Kaplan. She is the author of The Interpreter. She's also the prize-winning author of The Collaborator and French Lessons. She's joining us from Durham, North Carolina. Alice, we are going to go to some of our callers.
Great.
Marty, you have a question for our guest, Alice Kaplan.
Yes, good morning, and happy Martin Luther King's Day to everybody. I understood about some of the black soldiers that were in France at the time and were being executed, it kind of served like two purposes. One, not to allow the black soldiers to stay in France, because there were some blacks that realized that, you know, they were getting a better treatment in France than what they were getting in the United States. So there was like rumors being spread saying that black soldiers had tails between their legs and everything. So, you know, I'm listening to this, and it was like a double-edged sword. One, they wanted to drive the blacks out of France so they couldn't have a place to roost. And then, two, they wanted the blacks to come back to the United States so they could be more controlled and they wouldn't start getting that freedom.
All right, thank you for your comment, Marty.
You're welcome.
There was two different issues going on here, Alice. We had people of African descent feeling that they were getting better treatment in Europe and in France in particular, and at the same time, did we have the racism or the non-acceptance of people of African descent in France?
Yeah, it's an excellent comment. I think that there was a desire to control these African American soldiers and let them know that they couldn't have the freedoms that they were feeling in the European theater. I also did see evidence of racism in Brittany among the civilians. I mean, certainly Victor Bignot, the man who was killed by James Hendricks, was a racist. He didn't like black soldiers. He was a veteran of World War One. He was terrified of the black unit. I think things were very different in Paris, where African Americans found a really open climate, and people stayed after the war.
And yet we see riots or rebellions in Paris, around Paris and these surrounding areas in the year 2005.
Right. And issues of, you know, no opportunities, unemployment, a lot of racism against North Africans and Arabs in France today. More, I think, than against French people of African descent, sub-Saharan African descent.
Talk to us about one point in your book. You talked about family members, French family members, talking about how they wish that they had gotten reparations.
Yes, I was so touched when Madame Bignot, the daughter, she was 18 years old back then, and I met her, and I saw the bullet holes in the door of the farmhouse.
They're still there.
Still there. Those towns have not changed. There's not the kind of mobility that there is here. So I was able to find her right there in that little hamlet. But the army tried to get her to come to the execution. She had no desire to go to the execution. But she wanted help. They wanted help. They were left with the farm to run. And
well, they offered her money, didn't they?
They offered her a really pathetic sum, saying, take this or you won't get anything.
About how much money did that was it 950?
What does she say? Was it something, you know, it was in the several hundred dollars.
Mm.
Nothing at all that really would have helped.
Because what we had here was we had a soldier who killed a civilian. The military, what were they going to do to compensate for that? And we had the United States military saying, come to the hanging.
That's right. You know, as though they would be interested in the symbolism of the hanging. They were completely uninterested.
And as if that would be enough.
That's right. And she's still bitter about that. And when I came to the door, she said, no American's been to see me since 1944 when they tried to get me to go to the hanging. You're the first one who's come around to find out how I'm doing.
Mm.
She was glad to see me. She was glad somebody was interested in her story.
Did she see it as an issue of race? Was race involved in this at all from her perspective?
Well, you know, she remembered very vividly that she could not identify James Hendricks. And in her own way, she said, I couldn't see a black man in the dark. She kept remembering how they tried to get her to identify him. No one could identify James Hendricks.
So the army, if I'm understanding this right, Alice, the army invited her to come to a hanging of a person that she had not identified?
That's correct.
Let me get to one more caller here. David, you have a question for our guest.
Yes, I do. Thank you. Look, in so often for people to do research such as you're doing, they come across other interesting topics or individuals. I wanted to find out, were you familiar with Johnny Nicholas, who was a spy for the United States? He was a African of Haitian descent, and he played a pivotal role in helping a lot of European Jews during the Holocaust. Had you heard about him? And there is one book I know of that is The Search for Johnny Nicholas. Have you heard of this individual?
Thank you, David.
Okay, thank you.
That sounds like a fascinating story. No, I haven't. That's something that would interest me quite a lot.
Well, we have about 2 minutes left here, Alice. What would you say was the most revealing thing for you in your research and your writing of The Interpreter?
I was very moved when you spoke in the beginning of the show about denial, We cannot live in denial about what happened in World War II. My African-American students taught me that the memory of World War II in the African-American community is very, very different.
Mm-hmm.
And we absolutely must respect that difference. I think I was living in denial. And this story, this gift of Louis Guillou, is to wake us up to the reality of that war for blacks and for whites.
And where can we find your book?
You can find it on Amazon. You can find it in bookstores. You can find it from the Simon & Schuster website.
And one more last question. How long did it take you to do this?
It took me 5 years, 5 years of work. But it was a very, very rewarding research, and it's changed my life and my perspective for always.
Did the family of James Hendricks, were they grateful for the information that you brought to them?
They were very grateful. In fact, I'm planning on calling them today to wish them a good holiday and find out how they're doing.
Alice Kaplan, author of The Interpreter, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Thank you.
My pleasure. Listen, folks, this is Liz Brown, The Wake Up Call. I will be back same time, same place tomorrow. Stay strong.
Please do not beg folks for power. Nobody is going to give it to you. You were born with power.
Very sad news for all of you. The people who love peace all over the world. Martin Luther King was shot and was killed tonight in Memphis. I will never say that progress is being made. If you stick a knife in my back 9 inches and pull it out 6 inches, there's no progress. You pull it all the way out, that's not progress. The progress is healing the wound that's below me.
I think I'm hearing revolution.
Brothers, 920 on your AM dial, WGNU, Granite City, St. Louis.
From ABC News, I'm Daria Alvinger. For the third time in just over a week, a U.S. helicopter crashed in Iraq. This time it was a chopper on combat air patrol that went down to the north of Baghdad. Retired Army General William Nash, now a senior fellow at the Council on Foreign Relations, isn't surprised that this type of thing is happening so frequently.
It's a high visibility target. And number two,